person to come is Larry from South Africa. Dodging lions. I think this is an exciting initiative that we're beginning here. It's going to be both conceptually and methodologically challenging, I believe, as we sort of stretch into the area of population health. And it's a great group of folks in the room, so looking forward to joining you all in this journey. Why don't we begin by introductions? I'm Paul Jarris. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, which we represent the 50 state, D.C., and the U.S. territories and freely associated states, public health agencies and departments. We're based here in Washington, D.C., and it's a pleasure to be here.
Actually, before I proceed to follow, as we're doing disclosures, good morning, I'm Holgerson. Perhaps we could also, introductions with disclosures
okay,
be more efficient,
good.
So maybe if Anne Hammersmith could just briefly describe what she'd like you to do to the General Counsel.
Good morning, everyone. For those of you who've been to our meetings before, this portion of the meeting is familiar to you, but I will go over it. Several weeks ago, you should have received a disclosure of interest form from us where we asked you very specific questions, and we then reviewed your responses. What we'd like to do here today is have you go around the table and disclose anything that you think is relevant to your service on this committee. I want to emphasize it's not necessary for you to summarize your CV. We just want you to disclose things that are particularly relevant to your service on the committee, and that may well be nothing at all. We'd like you to pay particular attention to relevant research or grant monies that you have, that you've had in the last 2 years, and also to consulting, including speaking fees, that you've had in the last 2 years, and anything else that you think is relevant. I also want to remind you that you serve on this committee as an individual, not as a representative of your employer or of anyone who nominated you to serve on the committee. You are serving as an expert. So with that, go back to Dr. Jarris and have him disclose. And then if you just go around the room, introduce yourselves and do your disclosure at the same time.
Okay. So our organization is a 501c3. We get substantial funding from Health and Human Services, largely from Centers for Disease Control and other branches of HHS. I don't perceive any of those in particular as a conflict here, but thank you. Dr. Stange.
Hi, I'm Kurt Stange. I'm a family physician and public health and preventive medicine physician from Cleveland. On the faculty at Case Western Reserve University. I also work at a federally qualified community health center. Have hospital privileges at our three healthcare systems, the Cleveland Clinic, Metro Health, our county system. Is that more detail than you want for this? Okay. I have a bunch of grants from the NIH and a few foundations, and doing three-quarter time for the next year with the National Cancer Institute. That's about it, I think.
Good morning. I'm Reva Winkler. I'm a Senior Director of Performance Measures at NQF. Thank you all very much for being here.
Good morning. I'm Elisa Mentali, a Senior Project Manager at NQF. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Robin Nishini. I was the former Chief Operating Officer at NQF, and now I'm a consultant to them.
Good morning. I'm Jacqueline Merrill. I'm an Associate Professor in Nursing and Biomedical Informatics at Columbia. I don't think I have anything to disclose. I have foundation funding and occasionally small funding from CDC.
Good morning. I'm Linda Kinsinger. I'm a general internist and preventive medicine physician and the chief of preventive medicine for the Veterans Health Administration. I have no financial disclosures to report. I do serve as a VHA liaison to the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force and the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning. I'm Sarah Lynn DeFreud. I'm a family physician and the Chief Public Health Officer of HRSA. I don't have anything to disclose.
Good morning. I'm Madeline Nagel. I'm a professor at NYU's College of Nursing. NYU is a private university in the public service. I have some NIDA funding on a substance abuse education grant. I also serve as the director of our World Health Organization Collaborating Center in Geriatric Nursing Education. No disclosures there.
Good morning. I'm Andy Weber, President and CEO of the National Business Coalition on Health. We're a national association of employer-based health coalitions around the country focused on triple aim of better health, better care, and lower costs. I have no financial conflicts. Our group does have a CDC cooperative agreement, and we have some foundation grants that relate to population health improvement at a community level, but I think I'm okay. Thank you.
I'm Jason Spangler. I'm the Chief Medical Officer of Partnership for Prevention, which is a health policy and research nonprofit organization here in D.C. that focuses on clinical prevention and community prevention. We also have a cooperative grant with CDC, and we get some foundation funding, some funding from pharmaceutical companies as well, but I don't have any financial conflicts in this disclosure.
I'm Bobby Pestrong, the Executive Director at the National Association of County and City Health Officials, NACHO. We are a 501c3 organization located here in Washington, D.C., and we represent the approximately 2,700 local health departments across the country. NACHO receives grants from the federal government, predominantly the Department of Health and Human Services. We also receive foundation funding as well. I don't believe I have any conflicts to disclose.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Mike Stodo. I'm a professor of Health Systems Administration and Population Health at Georgetown University. Most of my research is funded by CDC, some in partnership with state and local health departments, and a little bit of foundation work as well, but I don't think I have anything to disclose.
Hi, I'm Matt Stiefel, Senior Director for Care and Service Quality at Kaiser Permanente. No financial disclosures. I am a fellow and faculty member with IHI for the Triple Aim Initiative and serve on a couple of NCQA committees.
Hi, I'm Sue Pickens with Director of Population Medicine at Parkland Health and Hospital System, a county health, large health system in Dallas, Texas. And I don't believe I have anything financially to disclose.
Good morning. I'm Sarah Sansla, Health Index Strategies Director with WellPoint. We manage 14 Blue Cross Blue Shield plans across the country, typically branded by Anthem. And we own Resolution Health, which we will be reviewing one of their measures. And then previously, I was a measure developer at NCQA.
Hello, my name is Keith Mason. I'm the Executive Director of the National Forum for Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention, a 501c3, in which it's an organization of organizations that care about cardiovascular disease and the prevention of that. We are a 501c3 that receives funds from pharma companies, CDC, NHLBI, and AHA, but I have no conflicts myself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Larry Cohen. I'm Executive Director at Prevention Institute, and despite what I said earlier about living in South Africa, I actually we're in Oakland, California, and I just was in South Africa and feel like I should live there. You know, our work is entirely on prevention in the first place, ideally before medical services are necessary. So I hope that's an attribute and not a conflict, but our funding is to do that and to promote that.
Okay, thank you.
Do you want to introduce yourself at the end? And disclose any conflicts.
I do. This is Ron Bialik. I do not have any conflicts related to this activity. And sorry for being tardy.
Who do you work for?
Work for the Public Health Foundation. Last I checked.
Okay, thank you everyone for those disclosures. Do any of you have any questions of me, or is there anything you want to discuss with each other based on your disclosures? Okay, thank you. Have a good evening.
Helen and the staff, could you otherwise introduce yourselves?
Thank you. I'm Helen Griffin. I'm the Senior Vice President for Performance Measures at NQF. Thank you all for being here. Some very familiar faces and some new ones, which is not surprising considering this is definitely a new area for NQF. And we thank you for your patience. It was a bit of a blending of minds and culture, and we recognize that. And hope you can help us see the path forward. We'll have lots more opportunity to talk, but I'll pass it back to Paul.
Great.
Kristen? Kristen, did you want to introduce us? Okay, thank you. Okay. So just a couple ground rules. The restrooms are down the hall to halls to my right here. During the presentations, if you want to ask questions, just raise your hand. If we're having a discussion and you have something that follows on what's been said before, just jump in. If you want to get in the queue and we're having an active discussion, go ahead and put your card up like this and we'll recognize you. And Paul and I have a list here that we'll develop for running the discussion. And Elise is going to give us our charge and frame for the day.
Yes. Thank you very much. The steering committee has received much of this information during your orientation call and during your work group call, but we thought it was important to repeat some of this. And I also wanted to just highlight a couple of housekeeping things just to add to what Dr. Stange has just mentioned. We are recording and transcribing this meeting. So whenever you're speaking, whether you're providing a comment or a question, we ask that you make sure your microphone is on. The transcript and the recording will be posted to our project page within the next few weeks. And we also just wanted you to know that we have participants on the phone. This is an open call. It's open to NQF members and to our public who will have opportunity at several points during the agenda to make comments. And we've also invited measure developers who will be here to add, to clarify any questions that the steering committee may have on their measures. And so, Kristen, if you can advance the slide. And we've, I think, all introduced ourselves so we can go to the next slide. And we've outlined several meeting objectives. They include the evaluation of the clinical preventative services and immunization measures for endorsement. And in doing so, if there are any related and competing measures, we're hoping that the committee will identify those for further evaluation of measure harmonization or to select the best measure in class among the competing measures. And we're hoping that in doing so as well that we identify gaps in performance measures for the measures that are in front of us today. We're asking also the committee to provide feedback on the population health annotated outline, and the authors of the outline will be participating by teleconference at about 11 a.m. there in California, so I think they might be still sleeping at this point, but they'll be here to answer any questions. They'll give a brief update, and they'll be here to answer questions, detailed questions about the outline. We're also hoping that we'll be able to identify measurement principles for endorsement of population health measures and be able to assess how NQF measure evaluation criteria might apply to population health measures. And finally, we're hoping to identify measures that address healthy behaviors, and this will be part of phase two of the project. With regards to the meeting format, as I mentioned before, members and the public will have opportunity to provide comments. Our measure developers are here, and what they will do is at the beginning of each measure topic, whether it's the immunization influenza measure, they will give a brief update about 3 to 5 minutes. And they're here throughout to be available to answer any of the questions that you may have. And then the steering committee will discuss and vote on each of the measures that are put before you. As mentioned before, we are extremely excited about the project. And essentially what we're attempting to do is to expand NQF's portfolio of existing preventative services and healthy behaviors measures. And in doing so, we're trying to foster harmonization of these types of measures at all levels of analysis, especially at the provider and population level. This project is very unique in that the committee will not only consider provider-level measures for endorsement, but also population-level measures later on in the project in phase two. This work will be carried out in two phases. During the first phase, the committee will evaluate 19 endorsed and newly submitted clinical preventative services and immunization measures. Also during phase one, the committee will initiate foundational work to prepare for phase two, which we hope will be a consensus development project for provider and population level healthy behaviors measures. And those measures would include topic areas like smoking, obesity, and physical activity. Because this evaluation and endorsement of population level measures, as we mentioned before, is relatively new for NQF, there's a great deal that we have to learn, define, and standardize. And so in preparing for phase two, the committee will identify measurement principles for endorsement of population health measures. They will also look at our measure evaluation criteria as it might apply to population health. And the committee will also have significant input in the call for measures for healthy behaviors in phase two. To further lay the foundation for phase two, we have selected a contractor, the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, who will develop a commission paper to include an environmental scan and gap analysis of population health measures. They will join us later on, as I mentioned, by phone. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the timeline, and this is the same timeline that I shared with you during our orientation call and I think during the work group meetings. And right now we're nearing the middle of it, and I won't go into detail, but it's included in your slide packet. Kristen, the next slide. And also to share again, we thought it was important to reiterate the role of steering committees. And as you know, the steering committee will act as a proxy for NQF multi-stakeholder membership for this project. You will work with us to achieve our goals, and that's us as staff. You evaluate the submitted measures against our measure evaluation criteria. These will be the 19 measures that you're starting off with today. After you've discussed your measures, you're going to make recommendations to NQF membership for endorsement. And during our comment period, which is open to NQF members and to the public, you'll respond to those comments. Your co-chairs, Paul Jarris and Kurt Stange, will represent you at our project webinar and at our consensus standards approval committee meeting. The following outlines the 8 steps of the consensus development process, and right now we are on step number 3, which is the candidate standards review. And so the committee is going to review, evaluate, and recommend for endorsement the 19 measures that are in front of you. And this is just a visual schematic of the CDP, and it shows the important steps again in the entire process, including the current step, which is highlighted for you. Since this is part of an endorsement maintenance process, we thought it was important to outline the significance of this process. We recently tightened our endorsement maintenance process for consistency and to allow our measure developers, our members, and our public sufficient time and notice of upcoming projects. We now have a regular schedule for maintaining endorsements of NQF-endorsed consensus standards to ensure that these remain current. Measures are up for maintenance review every 3 years. Developers are notified several months in advance of their scheduled maintenance review, and they may opt out of the process. If they choose to do that, their measure will lose NQF-endorsed measurement status. If they proceed with the process, the measure must be reviewed against all of our current evaluation criteria. During this process, we have accepted new and endorsed measures with the increasing number of measures in our current portfolio and the new measures, we're encountering a number of similar and or competing measure issues, which may warrant harmonization of measure specifications or a determination of which measure is best in class. And so that gives you just a brief update on the project and where we are within the context of our evaluation criteria. And now I wanted to turn it over to Karen Adams from the National Priorities Partnership, who will talk about NPP and the work they've done on population health.
Dr. Meadows, would you like to welcome, and would you like to introduce yourself? And if you have any conflicts of interest, you have to disperse the money to us, and then we'll go on.
I've missed you, Paul. I'm Rhonda Meadows. I'm a family physician. I am the Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for UnitedHealthcare. I am in charge with improving the quality and performance for Medicaid and Medicare plans, as well as for commercial plans. And I don't know how else to describe conflict of interest other than saying that I work for an insurance company.
There are other guilty parties in the room. You're okay. And others of us who used to. So. Frank, would you introduce yourself and let us know if you have any conflicts?
Hi, everyone. Frank Leone, pulmonologist at the University of Pennsylvania. I direct the comprehensive smoking treatment programs there. I have no conflicts to declare.
Well, very good. We'll have a lot of time this afternoon to talk about population health and how it's some of the issues that we have to look at in there. It's helpful for me to keep in mind with these NQF meetings that in many ways these are cross-cultural meetings. When we bring together folks from the clinical sector, insurance, public health, we often have different worldviews and look at the world differently. And so I think it's very important for us all to be patient as we share our concepts with each other and learn the concepts from the other sectors. And by the end of this, we'll all meet somewhere close to the middle and be a lot smarter for it. But it's going to be quite a process. So, with that, I'd like to introduce Karen Adams, who is the Vice President of the Priorities Partner, National Priorities for National Quality Forum. I've worked extensively with her and wonderful staff person here and leader.
I just had one question about Lisa's slides. It said phase one was over in January, but it didn't really say anything about phase two. Is that phase one and two, or it just indicated phase one on the timeline?
Phase one actually isn't over in January. We're hoping it will be over in the spring.
Okay.
Phase two, we're hoping it will be over in fall, fall 2012, yes.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, in particular around NPP's work, National Priorities Partnership work. We've just released a report to the Secretary of Health and Human Services on September 1st, so the timing is very important, particularly to this work. And although we're going to offer a kind of an overview of the report, we have paid special attention in particular to the population health-oriented recommendations, and we certainly welcome your feedback. Allow me to acknowledge that Paul Darris did serve as our co-chair of the National Priorities Partnership Population Health Subcommittee, and also Jason Spangler and Matt Siefel, who are on the committee, contributed to that work group as well. And so Matt and Jason, tell us if we get it right. We welcome your input here as well. So since, as Paul shared, we have both people who are familiar to NQF processes around the table as well as those who have been involved with the National Priorities Partnership or other work, I thought I would spend a few minutes on setting some context slides, and then Paul will go into the details around the recommendations, and we'll do a little bit of wrap up about the next steps and path forward, because certainly this work will be very instrumental in connecting the dots, so to speak, with this national level initiative. So if we can go to the next slide, please. Just a brief overview. NQF, of course, many of you are familiar with our long-standing history around endorsement of performance measurement, but we do have a three-part goal, and about 4 years ago, our board did expand our mission, and you see this here, building consensus on national priorities and goals, and this is the work of the National Priorities Partnership, endorsing our consensus standards, which will be an important role that you'll be playing, and then promoting alignment and the goals through education and outreach programs. Just a little bit of context setting around NQF, which is the convener of the National Priorities Partnership and how this plays into our broader mission. Next slide, please. A little bit about the National Priorities Partnership. Now, in your background material, we provided a list of all the organizations, and certainly on our website, we have our contact individuals who serve, but these are organizational representatives. As I mentioned, the National Priorities Partnership is convened by NQF, and it includes 48 organizations across every sector of healthcare. And I'd like to emphasize here that importantly, when we began our work 4 years ago, we recognized that we needed additional representation from our colleagues in population and public health. And so, you know, Paul and as well as others have been added to this group to ensure that we have this broader view of health. You'll see the various other representatives of organizations we have on this committee, from consumers through health plans, through industry. We also have federal partners that you see listed here. We work very closely with Peter Brist at the CDC, as well as others. And our federal partners are ex officio non-voting. And this effort is led by Bernie Rochelle from the Physician Consortium and Helen Darling from the National Business Group on Health. So a little bit about the NPP. So let me give a little bit of context, particularly in the realm of health reform and ACA. And within the ACA legislation, HHS must develop a national strategy around this triple aim of better care, affordable care, and importantly, healthy people, healthy communities. And so it was from the beginning, it was very strongly felt that the NQS should be shaped by multi-stakeholder input, that this is a national strategy, certainly a federal type of initiative, but it's a national strategy that requires input across sectors. And so it was very important that there was coordination and alignment around the various stakeholder groups. And so HHS requested NQF to convene the NPP, which had already been active for a number of years, to serve in that role to provide this input from across the different sectors. So specifically, last fall in October, the National Priorities Partnership provided upfront input into the National Quality Strategy. So we were asked to provide some input around the preliminary framework that was put forth around this three-part aim. Then this year, when the National Quality Strategy was released in March, the National Priorities Partnership was asked once again to provide input on the goals and the measures and strategic opportunities. And I'm going to focus a little bit on these strategic opportunities because there's clearly a role for population and public health, and as we'll be emphasizing, you know, that bridging of delivery system and the public health, population health sector. So this input was very critical as we moved on. So we will, of course, Paul will speak to the goals and the and the associated measure concepts, but I do think that the strategic opportunities as we think about this work will be critical as well. We just submitted our report to the Secretary first September. We're happy to provide a PDF or copies of the report for you in detail. I know you got a lot of background material, so we didn't want to weigh you down too much. So as we speak to these strategic opportunities, and I'll ask if we go to the next slide, please, and then to the next slide. Thank you. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Here are some of the three strategies. So if the HHS asked us, can you map some strategic opportunities to each of these goals? And when the NPP was doing their work, they said, you know, certainly it would be fortunate to have 32 strategic opportunities or however the number of goals were, but we thought that three really surfaced to the top as kind of an organizing framework. And one was that we needed a national strategy for data collection, measurement, and reporting that supports measurement-based improvement. We hear in the field particularly this kind of the noise and the cacophony, and there needs to be alignment. Alignment is a huge message that certainly came through our public comment period. So this first strategic opportunity around a national strategy for data collection, very critical. And as we think about that, how do we integrate our public and population health level data into that data collection strategy will be very critical. The report goes into much more detail around each one of these strategies, but, you know, in regards to time today, I won't go through all those, but, you know, certainly the work that you'll be doing now will be very important to this strategy. The second strategy is around community infrastructure, and this is a public and private, and that, you know, we need to work with communities. Communities are innovating. It's not so much about telling communities what their goals should be, although certainly we want alignment with the National Quality Strategy, but how do we help them and support them with the work that they're doing and building an infrastructure for measurement, public reporting, and importantly, a feedback loop for best practices. So very bi-directional, and we've been working with our community and regional-based representatives in this regard. And then the third, which probably will come to no surprise at all, is around payment and delivery system reform and the importance of primary care. Our report places a lot of attention on upstream prevention and looking at these different types of integrated delivery models that are under ACA. As I shared, these are played out further in the report, but we did want to spend a few minutes on that because certainly your role moving forward around playing out these recommendations will be very critical. So Paul, I'm going to turn it over to you because, of course, this will get into the goals and strategic opportunities, and happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, Karen, and Matt and Jason. Please feel free to help where we need your help. They made great conceptual breakthroughs during our meeting. Both of them contributed significantly. So overall, then, in looking at this, the HHS National Quality Strategy had come out with six national priorities. There were three. This is based on the triple aim or the three-part aim. There were two priorities under what was called community and population health, three priorities under patient experience, quality of care, and another two priorities under affordability. One priority under affordability. For each of those priorities, we were to establish three goals and then look at measure concepts and measurement gaps if we were going to actually establish a consistent national system way of looking at quality improvement across the country. If you can see that slide, your eyes are better than mine, but on the top of that slide, you can see that there's better care, and then, again, patient experience, quality of care, and then affordable care on the bottom right, and on the left, population, healthy people, healthy communities. Incidentally, during this process, we did not have, that I could determine, a common definition of what we meant by population health. And frankly, in looking back, I haven't found one in IHI or HHS in general. So I think that's something we'll be talking about in our next session. The priorities established, you can see the six of them in the middle, or perhaps you can't see it, health and well-being, prevention and treatment of the leading causes of mortality. And by that, cardiovascular health was chosen, the ABCs. Person and family-centered care, patient safety, effective communication and care coordination, and affordable care. So if we could flip to the next slide. The Healthy People Communities Subcommittee, there's several themes we came up with that we wanted to make sure we then checked back at the end of the process that we had stuck with them. We really wanted to promote health and well-being. So the concept of well-being is introduced, which is gaining further support. Incidentally, I got an email from Target Corporation today, and health and well-being of their employees and customers is one of their corporate goals now. But again, going beyond just disease or absent disease, trying to find out what are the attributes and characteristics of well-being was important to the group. Health equity was critically important. We find that many of the publications and documents, wherever they come from, including the HHS ones, certainly mention health equity, but when it gets down to it, there's very little meat on the bones. And we wanted to really introduce this as an important concept, and that we will not have a healthy population unless we specifically address health equity. Recognizing the need for intervention across the lifespan, Charlie Homer was on the committee, so needless to say, pediatrics was well represented. But also just the notion that for CMS, for example, there's little they can do if everyone hits age 65 and enrolls that are very ill, that we really have to look at what factors predispose people toward illness, or in fact, the concept of health sustainability would be an interesting concept. How do we keep from breaking people in this nation, breaking their health? Incorporating community, behavioral, and clinical concepts. So in other words, broad-based notion of what constitutes health and well-being, not just the physical, clinical health that we often deal with in the healthcare sector. And emphasizing the importance of composite and outcome measures. So ideally, we would have composite measures, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, that you could disaggregate into specific behaviors if you're looking at what is a measure of healthy behavior, for example. Next slide, please. So the goals, we set three goals, and I think this actually may be important to this group and could inform some of the work of this group. Clearly, it appeared to the committee that much of the concept of what was around community and population health was at the clinical level, clinical preventive services, and in the most limited way of viewing that, you're talking about a population health as clinical preventive services among my patient population, or it could be my hospital service route, or my insured or enrolled in insurance company. And we wanted to recognize that strong view held by many people out there by putting on the bottom, if you look at the third bullet there, receipt of effective clinical preventive services across the lifespan in clinical and community settings, acknowledging that clinical preventive services are important. But then to go above that, and I think this is perhaps touched on in what's called phase two of this project, we wanted to look at healthy behaviors. And behaviors, we don't simply mean pejoratively, you know, if people only behave right, they would be healthy. But healthy behaviors means that people live in a context in which it is possible to choose healthy behaviors, and that those healthy behaviors become the easy and perhaps default behavior. If you're living in a food desert, or if you live in a crime-ridden area, you simply can't get healthy food. You can't afford it, or it's not available in your inner city or rural grocery store, and your kid can't walk to school or play in the playground because it's full of drug dealers. So, again, here the context is, how do we create an environment in which healthy behaviors become the easy choice? And on the top, the third aspect or goal aspect was community interventions that result in improvement of social, economic, and environmental factors, recognizing there are social determinants of health that are very powerful, and that there are policy levers, both public and private policy levers, that can affect the environments in which people live, which can make the difference between being able to live a healthy life and not. So we introduced this concept of these three tiers of goals and carried that through. And I think that might be something, this made it through the National Priority Partnership overall. So it is an official NQF, I think we could say, position. So therefore, I think, again, we might want to look at that as we try to conceptualize what we're doing within this group. Next slide, please. The measure concepts, I think the importance in looking at these is that look at how broad-based they are. Concepts of adequate social support or social capital, connectivity, has a lot to do with resilience. You see that a lot within youth or substance abuse or mental health and other areas. And so it is a very important concept to start looking at. Mental health, we wanted to make sure, there's a substance abuse measure up here, and binge drinking. We wanted to make sure we were looking at other leading causes of death and disability, and not simply locked into the physical health that we often spend our time with. ED visits for injuries, we put that in there because injuries still continue to be one of the major causes of death for people under age 35. And that can be addressed both at an individual level in the clinic, unless you live in Florida, which is illegal to ask if you have a gun. Excuse me, Rhonda. A former Floridian. But it can certainly be addressed at the behavioral level, in terms of getting people to wear a seatbelt, and it can be addressed at a policy level in click it or ticket or many other ways. We thought it was important in looking at behaviors to try to come up with some index, not do you just eat right or do you exercise, but what is the composite measure of healthy behaviors to see how people at a population level, how are they, are they able to and do they choose to behave in a healthful manner. And then dental health made it up here also. Important because dental health not only is one of the most common chronic illnesses, if you look at it from that point of view, but it certainly affects how children can learn in school, and it affects people's employment and employability. If your teeth are rotten, you can't even work a retail job, and again, back to social determinants, your median family income is probably one of the major determinants of your health. And then immunizations, which I think we'll get to today, a very obvious preventative measure at the population level. Next slide, please. Gaps, again, there's a lot of measurement gaps, we believe, probably in this community and population level, particularly from NQF's perspective, since this is an area they haven't worked on. I think those in public health perhaps have different types of measures that they look at, but they may or may not fit within the current NQF methodology. So healthy lifestyle behaviors, again, a composite. Community health, environmental assessment. What does it mean to be a healthy or healthful community that promotes well-being? How do we measure that? My guess is that we don't really have a good measure right now. We have many measures. Productivity, this concept was introduced in terms of, if you're talking about well-being, you're probably talking about people's functioning as well. I mean, are kids going to school, or are they absent? Are people at work, and are they productive? There's not absenteeism, presenteeism, and other things like that. Are elderly people able to live a full life in their retirement years? These are gaps we think will have to be addressed. Next slide, please. The second national priority was promoting effective prevention, treatment, intervention practices for leading causes of mortality, and HHS specifically wanted to look at this notion of cardiovascular disease as the number one killer in the nation in the disease category. Again, we applied the goals at the preventative services, behavioral, and community level. We can go on to the next slide. And rather than looking at, in this community and population, at the specific disease processes, we were trying to look at the causes, if you will, the underlying causes of these diseases, which would, of course, be tobacco, nutrition, exercise, and alcohol and other things. Although we did hit measures in all three levels of the goals here. We're going to go on to the next one. So population levels, measurement gaps of some of these clinical things, how do we measure that? I think we might talk more about that here. As Dr. Stange said, what is the denominator and how do we use that? The ABCs, we do need good, so aspirin, blood pressure control, cholesterol, and smoking. Do we have good aggregate measures of that at the population level? And then healthy foods. How do we measure whether or not an individual or a community has access to healthy foods in their communities? There's been a lot of work done on food deserts and all, but I don't think there's an accepted measurement for that. Next slide. Now we're into the area of patient experience or the quality and quality area. And a large emphasis on person and family-centered care, engaging people in their care as active participants, as knowledge participants who can navigate the system and also be clearly involved in leading their own care. And I'll let you read through some of these goals and measures. I won't go through them in the same detail as the prior one because they're clearly very important, but you can read these on your own if you will. Next slide, please. Patient safety, again, a very important area. The HHS has the Partnership for Patients, which NQF is working with them on, which is basically a patient safety initiative. I encourage you to all look at this. For those of you across the spectrum, it's another area where there are active discussions with HHS and CMI, Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, about the role of people outside of the purely clinical sector in patient safety. It tends to have been launched as a clinical initiative, and they are starting to gain an appreciation that much of the work for patient safety goes on in the public health sector also, all the way from preventing healthcare-acquired infections to hospital licensing and on and on. Next slide, please. Effective communication and care coordination. Certainly culturally competent communication is important. We need to measure and develop goals around, but also the care coordination between levels of care, whether that is handoffs, primary care, specialty care, hospital, long-term care, nursing home, but also the notion here that we need to engage the community and understand how the clinical sector and the community integrate and how that handoff and care coordination occurs. Next slide, please. The final group, affordable care. Again, a critical component of everything we do. I'll let you read these here, but some interesting concepts about consumer affordability. I'm sorry, my eyes are failing me, and I'm not on my slides here, so I wish someone closer would read some of these. Trying to limit the annual percentage of growth in healthcare, as well as the per capita healthcare costs. You know, can we compare that from one area to another? Who actually has responsibility for that? And can we set goals and achieve them, which will be the real challenge here. Next slide. Karen, I think we're back to your area here.
So we thought we might wrap up just with kind of a context setting and where this falls in the broader quality picture, the big picture, so to speak. And this slide here represents what we refer to as the functions of the quality enterprise. There are many important contributors and stakeholders to this and the various moving parts. And where do we fit here? We just, if you look at the first box, we just shared that, you know, an important part of a quality enterprise is to establish national priorities and goals. And so part of the work of the National Quality Strategy and the National Quality Partnership feedback into that was one of those critical first steps. And you see that in the box we focused that around the triple aim of better care, affordable care, and healthy people community. As we go along this flow, the next box is around identifying measure gaps. Paul highlighted several of the measure gaps that were identified for population health. There are other gaps, particularly as we think about more cross-cutting measures as well, but certainly one of the roles that you'll be serving is to help us fill some of these measure gaps that are critical for advancing the goals around population health. And then certainly there's upstream measure development or looking at existing measures and how those might be applied. And now the green box that we also have highlighted is the endorsement process that you're participating in. I'll go through the other ones just quickly, but certainly one of the strategies we talked about were building data platforms and how do we collect these various data streams so that we can get a good overall picture of health and public reporting, our next box, and using that for informed choice and selection and decision making. We talked about another strategic opportunity around payment and alignment of payment incentives and with these various care deliveries, which certainly translates into improvement around quality improvement and performance. And we don't want to forget that we need to have an ongoing feedback loop, and that evaluation just isn't at the end, but this has to be built in up front, and certainly to look for any unintended consequences as we think of these measures and they're applied. So a little bit of context as to where we may fit into this broader quality arena. And then our next slide we have here, we're starting to refer to this as the cascade. And I noticed that when I reviewed your materials over the weekend, there was some reference to this cascading. And how do we get this type of shared accountability across all levels of the system? And so if you think at the national level, and we use this as an example for tobacco, and Paul, you talked about different policies too that would come into place as we look at these different levels, and what drivers or what type of things would we look at these each levels to advance towards these goals. This one gives an example around tobacco. It could be played out, and it's illustrative, of course, but it could be played out various ways. So and this really builds on some of the early work of the National Quality Chasm, where they spoke to different levels in the microsystem, and this is really evolving into, the HHS asked for National Quality Partnership at the national level, what measures and measure concepts would you want to put forth to evaluate against the goals that were identified? But certainly there's a role at the state and community level, health plan. I would also add, certainly these emerging areas around ACOs, patient-centered medical homes, other shared saving models. Provider level, from hospitals, nursing home, home health, et cetera, and then the individual provider. And we don't want to forget about, of course, the consumer. So, in an ideal world, this would cascade and roll up and down, and we know that there are many methodological as well as harmonization issues, but as we strive for this shared accountability, this is a concept that's coming forth, this cascading, and we do speak to it in more detail in the report. It also ties into some work the NQF is doing around the Measure Applications Partnership. HHS has asked us also to convene another partnership to look at recommending measures and measure sets for payment and public reporting and pre-rulemaking input. So, very important to kind of connect the work we're doing at the MPP at the national level with these various units of analysis. So, Paul, I'll turn it back to you. I think that wraps it up for our background.
Good. Jason or Matt, did you want to add anything, having sat through this process?
Well, perhaps this comment will just foreshadow the discussion that we have later today about the relationship between that work and this work. One thing that jumps out at me is the framing, with the three-part framing of this work, of community, behavioral, and clinical. And what appears from the pre-reading here is a two-part framing, behavioral and clinical and not community. And I'm happy to defer that to the later conversation, but I think that's something that is important to address.
Jason, anything to add? Okay. Other comments or questions from the group? Dr. Stange.
just to Matt's comment, I actually have a question for Helen. So this looks like the work that Karen and Paul presented looks like very helpful background for our work, and we certainly have the chance to have an influence on this analytic framework the subcontractor is doing. And I'm wondering about the things you're going to present on the measurement evaluation that we received some stuff about. Do we have any influence on this, or is this a done deal?
That is very, very grassy. That was literally just our attempt to put something in front of you as we recognize how difficult it will be to kind of put some square pegs in some round holes. And I also just want to briefly respond to Matt's comment, because I do think as we've thought about how to frame this project, the question is, can we do all of it at once? And I think as we've talked with our HHS colleagues, for example, and at least thought it would be helpful in our first foray out into this area to try to focus on a couple high-priority areas and chose, for example, at least as the initial starting point, smoking, obesity, and exercise, that could we potentially use those three as the way to explore those three levels that emerged from the MPP? I think our concern was, would we be boiling the ocean and then just kind of fail? If we couldn't at least try to stick to a set of areas where there is logical overlap between clinical behavior and community. So I don't think we meant to exclude community at all. I think we were just trying to wrap it in the context of what's doable. And also a big part of what we do, as we'll talk about going forward, is a lot of what ACF has been working on over the last several years is really harmonization of measures. We've spent an inordinate amount of time trying to take measures that come from different sewers, that come from different sectors, nursing home, hospital, home health, ambulatory. I mean, just the amount of cacophony out there just on the clinical sector alone has given us a tremendous amount of work. Reva has gained many gray hairs through cardiovascular projects this year alone, as you can imagine how many measures there were to be harmonized. So I think one of the challenges is going to be, is can we at least begin thinking about that framework of harmonizing a reasonable set of the highest priority areas in those domains. So by no means do we mean to exclude community, but I think it's in the context of those higher priority areas, if that helps, Matt.
So if I could just follow up on that. So the instrumental steps that Lisa talks to us about are really about clinical preventive services in phase one and then the health behaviors in phase two. But there is potentially a phase three that's not yet articulated that's really broader and that might involve the community and other things. And our chance to set the frame for that is when we talk about these measurement evaluation criteria and then the analytic framework and principles. Is that?
That's a good question, Greg. I guess as we were thinking about it, I'm not sure that we can't do two and three together. So I think in some ways, and Paul's going with it, I think in some ways we, and that's part of our challenge here, right? So some people think of some of the community indicators, for example, that may emerge from BURPIS or some of the other indicators projects that many of you have been working on. Isn't there an opportunity there to think about what those healthy behavior measures would look like at clinical as well as at community? And that's why, in fact, the smoking measures and the obesity measures are already submitted to us. And we've made the decision that you're not reviewing them in this phase because there's a critical opportunity, we think, to think about the harmonization as the other more community-oriented indicators flow through. But again, if that's not the right framing, we're certainly open to...
The reason I shake my head is that it's a very common perception that, you know, if people only ate right and exercised, they'd be healthy. But when I worked in an inner-city school, those kids couldn't eat right, and they couldn't walk to school. I saw sexual predators, registered sexual predators, sitting outside the playground of the school. So, you know, you just got to recognize it's the context that people live in. And one of our important jobs is to create an environment where people can be healthy, where those poor little kids could grow up and eat and get out to a playground. So, Larry?
Well, I had a very specific question, but I am going to jump into this instead first and then ask the specific, which actually relates based on your comment, Paul. I think in terms of the notion of cascading and in terms of the notion of unintended consequences, one of the things I'm very aware of is that when we start from our comfort zone and say, well, maybe, there's a limit to what we can accomplish, that one of the potential unintended consequences, that the emphasis on the community, which is where most health and maintaining health takes place, tends to be diminished or possibly ignored. And to say we'll get to the community later, we'll fold it into behavior, sets an approach or a context where it really tends to be minimized. And that, you know, and I'm fully understanding of the notion of we got to start with what we're most knowledgeable about, what we're most comfortable with. At the community level, the kinds of indicators that we have are much more difficult to access. It's much more challenging. And therefore, unless we really emphasize that, we often end up in a situation where the community, in effect, is given second trip, despite the fact that I think we probably all share the notion that the community is probably the focal point for maintaining health and wellness, and also for maintaining people who are not healthy, but maintaining their level of injury, illness, disability, et cetera, as opposed to it diminishing. So that worries me a great deal, and I mentioned that in the orientation, but it really worries me in terms of the structure and strategy here. The specific question I wanted to ask was, well, let me say one more thing about that, which is that my notion from work I've done on prevention over a number of years is that the fundamental issue is not one particular measure or approach, but it's really community norms change. So even, Paul, when you gave the example before, does the community have access to healthy food, you know, versus being a food desert? The question I would ask is, does the community overall emphasize healthy food? Where is the balance? What is the level of emphasis? Because only by changing norms and changing environments are we going to change from a sick culture to a healthy culture. And that's going even further, and it's harder to measure. Admittedly, it's very hard to measure, and therefore it worries me if we leave it out because it's hard to measure and say we'll start with where we're comfortable. So the initial question I wanted to ask was specifically when you mentioned safety, which I was very happy to mention, you mentioned whether we're also talking about violence prevention or just unintentional injury. Because for me, violence prevention is not only important in and of itself, but it's a critical trigger in terms of chronic disease, and more importantly, perhaps, in terms of your comments, a critical trigger in terms of equity issues. And if communities are not safe, then all the other community health factors can't come into play nearly as well, and we start to have a two-part society where some communities are safe and others aren't, and so there's a different level of attention. So, I mean, for me, that would be a high priority issue here, and I'm not sure whether this question applies to what you reported or it applies to later in the conversation, so that I just ask it.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point, Larry. And what within the earlier work advising HHS on the national quality strategy, we recognized that injury accidents was important. We looked, I think, at ER visits was the concept measure there, but we didn't specifically get into type of what led to it. Although, as I'm thinking about it, I wasn't thinking about violent injury, so I don't think we got there. I have an order here, which I think is the order in which the cards get up, but if it's not, then it's my own arbitrary order. Bobby, you go next.
I also like the idea of separating out the community frame from other frames so that it does get specific attention. And I wonder, given the fact that the agenda and the process for this group seems to have been established, perhaps a practical solution to identifying what the committee could address in the community frame is right now while we're in the first test of this process, why don't we commission a paper that could inform our subsequent conversation about what the community theme and frame means. And ask that be done by a group or groups that are knowledgeable about this area, so that the time we come to explore the community frame, we're not asking ourselves what it means. We have the background materials that we might concur would help inform our discussion. And then we have a running start on it rather than trying to drag it in to conversation for last night.
So part of the challenge, I think, underlying the question is, you know, there's a charge to this committee. How fixed is that? Where does it come from? How modifiable, you know, is it? I think that's what's underlying this conversation right now.
And just one brief response.
Are the resources to commission further work to inform us on other aspects of this?
And just I think if you look at the outline of the commission paper that the folks from LA are doing, I believe they actually are attempting to address it. Again, it's just an outline. They're going to be on the call with us today. I think there is an opportunity. I think they certainly have that knowledge to potentially move in that direction. I think you just need to take a look at that outline and see if there's a way to make that work, because that is part of their charge.
Mm-hmm. If I could just follow up on that. So that was actually the genesis of my question. So what are the outputs that we have and certainly that commission paper is one. What about this measurement criteria that you've presented? Do we have a way to influence this, and what's the mechanism for that?
Absolutely. You will be doing that today, as a matter of fact, having that discussion, helping us think through. And just to put this in context, and we can do this in a little bit, but we've done this recently when we did resource use measures for the first time. It was very clear some of these just didn't quite fit into our old mindset, Sarah smiling, of how difficult it is to evaluate those kinds of measures. And so we recognized we needed to go back, offer additional guidance, perhaps give some different terminology that does resonate with the different communities engaged in that part of measurement. So our expectation is we'll need to do the same thing for population health. So that is wide open, Kurt, for your input.
So we actually have two mechanisms now. One thing we can do is look to see how adequately we feel those mechanisms have captured the issues. And if not, then we could look at whether we need to recommend other mechanisms, perhaps.
I'd like to understand the framework that we're using a little bit better. For instance, if the priorities really are smoking, obesity, and exercise, if one were to construct a logic model and look at what really can impact that. For smoking, for instance, taxation and smoking laws in terms of secondhand smoke will impact that far greater than what can be done in the clinic. For obesity and exercise, similarly, far greater impact can be achieved outside of the clinical setting than in the far greater will be achieved in the community. Excuse me. So I'm just wondering the framework, because everything seems to be very clinically based. We're starting with the clinic. We're starting with the clinical intervention, and then we're cascading down to other interventions. And it seems to me that I would like to see laid out, again, where are we achieving the greatest impacts, and then look at measures within those areas of greatest impact that may be clinical or may be population-based. But I don't think separating it the way that we're doing is necessarily going to get us to where we want to be.
It's a good point, and I think that probably the area where we should look at is where's the interface between the clinical and the community. And back to the comment of this is a cross-cultural experience, NQF has historically been a clinical measures organization. And now they're inviting public health people to the table. So we got to start where NQF is and then try to move NQF or perhaps expand the sphere that they work within. So I think it could be dangerous for us to go right to community because there might not be a context in which it's understood. Which is why we came up with that three levels of measures to say, let's start at the clinical and then let's walk toward the others. But I think it's going to be important, at least from my point of view, that we understand that path includes going toward the community.
Paul, I'm not suggesting we start with the community. I'm suggesting we start by looking at what has the greatest impact. And then based on what has the greatest impact, where do we actually have measures? And it may be clinical, it may be community. But it just strikes me, again, if we're looking at the objectives of improving quality, cost, efficiency, et cetera, that separating the way that we're separating may be very unnatural. And I understand the perspective that we really, starting at the clinical may be just a necessary piece, but I think we need to be thinking about where's the greatest impact as we go along.
Could I ask a clarifying, thank you, Ron, a clarifying question. You mentioned that smoking, obesity, and exercise were focused. I didn't see that in the pre-read. Did I just miss that, or where did...
It's just in some of the discussions we've had with HHS that we recognize, again, we can't do everything, and they thought, given that those are among the highest priorities for the department, and those are the ones we think, going to your point, where there is the greatest interface, potentially, between some of the measures in the clinical space and some of the measures in the community space, that would be a good place to start. I'm not sure that's in conflict with the idea of doing a logic model and thinking about where those greatest impacts are, perhaps in those areas.
They are the top three underlying causes.
Exactly.
So maybe it makes sense. I think I had Linda next.
Thanks. I wanted to go back to the National Quality Strategy, the report that you mentioned. I've been involved with developing the National Prevention Strategy, also in the ACA, and there hasn't been any discussion of this report there, nor did I hear any really discussion of the Prevention Strategy report here. So I'm wondering how these two reports are intersecting, and or if they are, because it doesn't seem to me that they are. How could they?
So, Linda, thank you for raising that, because certainly this speaks to the alignment issue. And I apologize, I really should have emphasized that in my opening remarks, because one of the alignment issues, of course, is working closely with colleagues at HHS, you know, not only across the various programs, but even within HHS, and then how that also links with private sector initiatives. So as well as Paul, George Isham, Peter Briss have been very involved and very much want to have this syncing up and alignment with the national prevention strategy. But we also need to think there's lots of strategies coming out. We have the National Prevention Strategy. We have the Partnership for Patients in regards to the Safety Initiative. Today, the Million Hearts campaign is going to be launched around the ABCs. So I think there's a critical need here, and we've tried as we went through this, as you see the safety goals syncing up. I think it's really important that we have this syncing and we have this synergy, because these strategies all interconnect, and they're not competing strategies. I like to see them as reinforcing strategies, whereas for example, the Partnership for Patients, clearly the readmissions focus, the hospital-acquired conditions, of course, what being the community is very important as well. You know, how do we fill these population health kind of gap areas as well, and of course the prevention strategy. That, and I'll also add the SAMHSA framework, which very much built on the priority areas framework. So I think it's a critical message that the thinking and the aligning. And of course, now that the report is released, but really more upstream, we'd be happy to, you know, work with you in the quick. There's a new name for it. It used to be the Quick Two, but the Quick Group, the Quality Agency Interagency Group. There's like a severe the Quality Interagency Group amongst HHS that is looking at some of this, and so we're happy to work with that.
Would it be appropriate to ask that, in terms of particularly the National Prevention Strategy, which I think is key, to ask that the LA group look at that as part of their work and really incorporate that in terms of measures?
Very good.
There's also the National Action Plan to End Health Disparities, which doesn't seem to be integrated across, and that's a critical one that should be foundational to every one of the others. So
I remember at our first meeting we had several people come from HHS, just of course different things were in different stages of development, that to kind of see how upfront we might work on that thinking, since we're going fast in a parallel track. But thank you for raising that.
Remember?
Do I remember? A number of things I could say, but one to your point of coordinating. Is AFSCME still in existence, and do they have any interest in creating an overarching framework? And should they be included in these kinds of meetings? Assistant Secretary for Evaluation and Planning at HHS?
It does exist. Yeah. Sarah, do you know their involvement here? I don't, because I think we have...
ASPE is our project officer for the they're the coordinating link. So Kate Woodard is our project officer at ASPE, who oversees the contract which this National Priorities Partnership work was under, so ASPE is part of this process.
I hope she's a powerful personality.
So she honorates me also the secretary and one of our other links, and I believe she's going to be joining us at some point today.
Good. Okay. So the initial thought that I had was this. I'm a professor at Columbia, and so I teach the medical students three times a year, and I go in, and this is a sophisticated group, so you probably know the answer to the question, but they don't. So I ask them if the healthcare system is part of the public health system or if the public health system is part of the healthcare system, and I ask them true or false. And that simple framing of that the healthcare system is the major system is really how they think. And I see that we are, whether we want to or not, are starting to fall into that way of thinking, and it's deeply inculcated. So I think that that's something that we need to be aware of, that simple true or false when we're thinking about things. So it is the healthcare system is part of the public health system. That is really where we are. And so that kind of speaks to your concerns. And then there's another point. I'm trying to weave together a lot of disparate threads, is this idea that you get the call from Target. And I'm just thinking, well, the corporate culture in this country does drive decisions at community level, how money is spent, how actually municipalities have to spend money to respond to decisions that are made at the corporate level in terms of, you know, waste, packaging, salts, all kinds of things. And so that's another part of the puzzle that we're dealing with. And I'm also thinking that perhaps representatives from that community would not be it would not be a bad idea to include some kind of corporate representation, because corporate culture really does rule, and when you're talking about root causes, they're right there.
Very interesting. Andrew, Andy?
Bobby actually took my comment, and I just sort of endorse doing some early work on the community framing. You know, I think we have a fabulous opportunity to bring worlds together here through this committee, and I don't want to lose that opportunity, but I think some early work on the community framing, I think there's a clear consensus that that's where a lot of the gaps in the thinking reside right now, particularly as it relates to the history of NQF. So I think that would be an important early signal. And I think part of that, Helen, looking at your, you know, sort of a measure development enterprise, if you will, to do some early work on identification of measure gaps in terms of community conditions for health would be important as part of that work.
I think I'm
the only representative of the business community here. So let me say in terms of a response to the last comment that, mea culpa in terms of the business community's impact, both negative, but I think we also need to think of the leverage of the business community and their ability to impact all the conditions for better health. And I think the best way to approach the business community is not to lead with, you know, you create, you know, unhealthy products and stressful work environments, but to talk about the fact that the business community, when they look at the goal of health and productivity as a business imperative for them, we've got an opportunity to really engage the business community in very useful ways. So I think that's another part of, I hope, the bringing together of different parts. The wonderful thing about NQF, and why I spent so much time, I sit on the board of NQF, by the way, is that it's a wonderful representation of partnership capability and different stakeholders coming together. And so I just want to, again, say that the key to partnerships is finding common denominators among all the key stakeholders. And I think all the stakeholders have a lot more in common in terms of the goal of population health than we have, you know, what divides us, of which there are many issues I will recognize. So anyway, just...
You know, I think there's also some real leadership. If you look at, for example, Target doesn't sell cigarettes. They made that determination. Walmart is now one of the second or third largest organic grocer in the country. Largest, bringing organic foods to poor people who shop. I mean, they have a huge footprint in terms of doing good things in our community. So I think I agree, we should welcome them in. I'm curious, Frank and Sue, I don't know a lot about your procedure. You're coming from a clinical orientation, and I'd like to hear your thoughts about this. Is this resonating? Does this make sense? Is it like, are you looking at it and saying, what are these crazy people talking about?
Well, there's a little of that.
I'm actually learning quite a bit. So there's some ideas that have been floating around that I hadn't really thought too much about that have been crystallized for me this morning, so I appreciate that. It's true that I feel like the healthcare system is sort of the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It's the machine that just keeps moving forward, and it sort of sucks all the other perspectives out, the oxygen out of all the other perspectives. And I think that it's good to look around the table and see all the various perspectives trying to keep that in check. I actually sort of agree. I've sort of heard the words community perspective, community frame thrown around. I'm having trouble understanding exactly what that means. I think it would be a good idea if we, if somebody could educate me over lunch, that'd be great. But otherwise, if we could maybe sit down and just sort of come up with some standard definitions of what a community frame really means, that might be a good idea. I would encourage the group to sort of think outside the box. We have a lot of information that's already pre-existing about what works, what doesn't work, what the relative impacts are of different things. But this, I feel like this group represents an opportunity to take systems that may be broken and maybe not previously as effective as they could be and try and stimulate some change in systems to make them even more effective than they've been in the past. So I'm pleased to be part of this discussion, and it is definitely resonating for me, Paul.
Well, I definitely, like Frank, have learned a ton this morning already, and I represent a very large public health system working in community where if we have a community, a healthy community, we make money because they don't come to us. They don't have to be in the hospital. And I've spent my last 18 years trying to work and figure out how to measure what that is, as well as what kind of interventions work both from the clinical into the community and back and forth. And I look forward to participating in the discussion and trying to help figure this out.
Thanks, Emily. Matt, you sort of walk two worlds there with Kaiser Permanente, so you may be one who can help us bridge some of this. Any other comments? Anyone we didn't hear from who would like to take a chance to speak?
I have a question. It's actually interesting because I think that if you look at the framing of the LA Department of Public Health folks' outline, and they'll be on when it's almost morning on the West Coast with us, is I think they mainly framed it trying to understand the clinical care system and more the public health system as their frame. And I think one thing that might be helpful as they come on, you know, before they come on, I think it actually would be useful for us, Paul and Kirk, actually spend a little bit of time trying to do some definitional work, make sure we're all on the same page. Because I'm not sure everybody's using the community frame in the same way, or public health in the same way, or healthcare system the same way. And I think it's actually a worthy exercise.
I am sure they're not.
I know.
Michael, I was going to save this for when they get on the line, but I think that the relevant point here is that in the clinical world, we've spent a lot of time thinking about accountability that's associated with these measures. And the focus, I think, of the LA paper is on the shared responsibility for health outcomes. And they actually kind of, I think, shy away from the accountability of health departments and other organizations in the community for actually doing something. And I think that's what we have to work on. How do we look at, you know, holding different organizations, not just clinical, but all these other organizations, and not just health departments, but all the other organizations, including companies and so on, accountable for what they contribute to the overall outcome.
This is a critically important point Mike's bringing up, and it's something we really probably need to spend some time on. I think actually Andy, NQF as a whole needs to spend some time on this. It really is one of those grass is greener type pictures, because I know there's a couple people here who have been appointed officials in government, and you know the fact that you can get fired in an instant for a story in the newspaper, or that you may or may not have had anything to do with, is a real level of accountability. The fact that you are sued multiple times per week for things that are going on, that because you are a figurehead, is a level of accountability. I basically went for an umbrella policy recently, had to list all the lawsuits. Deanna Bonta from California had a lien put on her home and couldn't sell it because of a lawsuit against her in her official capacity. There are levels of accountability that are scary when you step into the public sector. And often, and we hear this, and I came from the clinical sector, when you hear it from people in the clinical sector saying, well, how are any of those people held accountable? I think they are. And I'd love to hear from the Targets and the Walmarts, why is Walmart selling organics? There's somebody on Wall Street holding them accountable for their product line at some level. So this conversation of accountability is going to be a very important one. But I would say that we have to move beyond what I've heard now for a couple of years at NQF is that, well, you know, those public health people, this is pretty close to a quote, nobody knows what they do and nobody knows how to hold them accountable. That's a view from somebody outside of the field, not from somebody in the field. Rhonda, you're shaking your head. I don't know how many lawsuits you have still hanging around you from Georgia. But
enough to keep my grandchildren busy for many, many, many years.
It was 3.5 years before my final lawsuit in a professional and personal capacity was dismissed after I left the appointed position in government. So, I mean, there's real accountability.
So in the clinical quality area, I think long ago we moved away from this idea about finding out the bad apples and to kind of measuring overall performance of systems. And it strikes me what you're just describing about public health is the old way, and we need to find a way to kind of measure performance in a kind of statistical way that's parallel to the
the healthcare provider system.
Right, we do. And tomorrow at the National Press Club, there'll be an announcement of the formal unrolling of the Public Health Accreditation Board to accredit state and local public health agencies. There hasn't been a process before. We've been working on it for 5 years now, so at least we can put that criticism aside. There's sort of a certification of the competence of the department. So.
During the year, there was an IOM report on measurement. We have are referencing that as well. Is that coming into this discussion? Because I didn't see that mentioned. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, and actually Dawn and Steve were one of the authors of one of the chapters of that report. So they'll be bringing that in as well.
Okay, good.
I'm particularly anxious that we not just have a nice conversation, that we look at the action steps. And I've really heard two action steps. One's the commission papers. So if we want to affect that, I think we should save our comments for when the people are on the line. Otherwise, we'll feel good about it, and it won't appear in the output. The other action steps that I've heard is the quality measure criteria that Helen's going to talk to us about, and Helen's in the room. So I'd like to suggest that we focus our efforts on that and think about how are we going to affect that, what's the feedback loop for us, what's likely to happen with that. But I also would like to make sure that we save some time before we go on to the more mundane work of going through the existing measures, that we say, okay, are we satisfied with where we are for next steps, or do we need to suggest something else? But I think the next step, since Helen's in the room, is to look at the measure evaluation criteria that are the drafty measurement criteria.
I mean, I feel like there's some kind of action step about reconsidering the agenda and strategy to bring a community in much earlier and in a much more consistent and significant way. I feel like that's the implication of a lot of what people have been saying, and I don't know exactly how the action step gets translated, whether it's by the staff or how, but I definitely don't think that was just idle conversation.
So, Larry, that's what I'm actually trying to do. I'm suggesting we have two steps on the table right now. One is Helen's work here with the measures. One is the commission paper. And I think after we've done that, I think we have to re-ask your question.
Okay.
Is that enough?
Final comment.
I was going to say, can I just second that motion and then we vote? What Larry just suggested?
Larry's suggesting, paraphrase, something I got it right, is that we actually look seriously, if you will, the goal or charge of this group, and so that it does include community as one of the measurement points, and that we start looking at that early on and preparing, as Bobby suggested, before we get there. Now, I don't know if that requires a vote, or if there's a consensus. Is there anybody here who strongly feels that that is not an approach we should take? Silence means assent.
No, I just feel like it's not, based on your comments, Kurt, I wasn't, and I want to just acknowledge I have very little understanding of exactly how this process works, and it's fairly new to me, but I wasn't clear of what the implications would be in terms of, for example, our work over the next 2 days. And to me, it says that our work over the next 2 days should look somewhat different than the current agenda, and that the way in which we approach things and the kinds of conversations we have and the kinds of questions we answer around what do we mean by community, what do we mean by a definition of population health, which in terms of what you were saying, Jacqueline, that you know, many people see the medical first, that I was actually very surprised very recently, frankly, to learn that population health often was about people with a medical condition rather than about the overarching population. And I think that really getting into some of those issues, the implications of those issues in terms of looking at things like the national prevention strategy as central to the way we think and not just as, oh, we'll get to that eventually. And that may, as I say, be totally implicit in what you were saying, and I just didn't understand it. But that's why I suggest that it's a very clear action step and requires some transition in the work we do here over the next couple of days.
And just in that definition of community, we want to bring in the business work-life aspects of it. Definitely has to be.
Okay.
let me just try to respond to Larry. I think we heard you loud and clear. I think the way the day has been set up is, in fact, all just discussion of these exact issues in terms of what the scope of the paper should look like. You're going to have the chance to talk to Don and Steve shortly. They completely get this. This is not alien to them at all, for those of you who know them. You'll have a chance. We've got a several-hour block this afternoon. We're going to just communicate, just discussion among the committee about what is population health. What are we really talking about here? So I think we have the opportunity to influence, as Kurt said, the framing of that paper, which is commissioned, and they're going to be doing that work, and we can kind of move them to make sure it fits the needs of the committee as it's emerging. I think also, as Kurt mentioned, these evaluation criteria are wide open. You can really say, you know, that this really works for very clinically oriented measures. It would never work for these kinds of measures. I think we'll kind of get closer to what we're talking about. I would still find it useful, and maybe that's more something we'll get to after the discussion with Steve and Don, to actually do some definitional work. So I think it would probably help us all make sure we're all on the same page. But I think that, you know, all that will be useful. We do, as a matter of course, just need to, because some of these measures are getting quite old. We need to look at those clinical preventive services and immunization measures. That's part of our process. We thought it would be useful to actually look at some measures that are the more traditional ones, as we then think about how we're going to kind of shift over to the more community-oriented measures in population health. So I think we're saying the same thing. I think we can get there.
I think so, too. And Rhonda, I'd ask you, you know, since you suggested about it, I think we hear enough consensus here to move forward. We were charged by NQF to, among the other things, to look at these measures, and I think we should do our housework as asked. And also the benefit to that is that will allow us to look at how NQF goes through their processes, so that as we then try to stretch into new areas, we at least understand where we're coming from. So, I agree it would be unsatisfying if that's all we did and left. But if we can do that, relook at the scope of what we're doing, and then start from the basis of how NQF approaches things, and again, try to move into new areas, I think then we'll really have done a service. Bobby, this is the final last comment.
Yeah, this is just a very quick one. It seems to me that somewhere here a picture would be helpful to orient us to our approach. And it might help us see both the logic behind the approach that we're taking and give us a way to focus on what we think the most important sets of measures around population health would be. It might suggest to us in a different way than trying to pour through a lot of prose what's most important and what's least important, and give others who are trying to understand the work that we're doing easy access to the approach that we are taking.
So, Helen, I believe our next step is to move to you for measure evaluation for population health measures. We're 6 minutes over, so we're doing pretty well.
Great. Thanks, everybody. So, here's your chance to see where we've been and help us think about where we go. So NQF, traditionally, the measures we have endorsed to date have primarily been measures that affect various sectors of the healthcare system with clear accountability to those providers, individual clinicians, health systems. And again, in some ways, as we've been thinking about a lot of the movement towards ACOs, I think it's going to be very similar kinds of issues about denominators and populations that I think will continue to be important even beyond this context of community as well. So what we thought would be helpful is actually to walk through the current NQF evaluation criteria, and you have that packet, it's attachment 4 in your folder, or sent to you electronically as well. And so we thought it would be useful to actually go through each element of our evaluation criteria, and see the applicability of those criteria for measures at population levels, including the community. NQF always uses the same criteria for all of our projects, generally. As I've mentioned, we've modified them slightly for certain projects like resource use, and we think we're going to do the same thing for an area like population health. Essentially the four cornerstones remain the same. Importance to measure and report, which I think gets to the issues Bobby and others brought up about trying to think about what are those most important areas we absolutely want to take care of and address.
The evidence base is being really critical for the measures. Scientific acceptability of the measurement properties, i.e. are they reliable, are they valid, are the specifications precise, is it usable, and is it feasible? So those four cornerstones, I would argue, probably still work, and I think the issue is really definitional and adding the guidance to make it work. So let's just walk through this. Yeah, go ahead, Kurt.
So in the things we were given in the opening memo, that those criteria are actually prefaced by saying any CREF's existing measure evaluation criteria appear to be appropriately specified for population performance measurement. And I think what we're hearing from the discussion is that assumption might not be true. So I think there's a good criteria. I think there is, what we're hearing is, let's think about what that means for community. Let's think about what that means when you actually specify a denominator. And that actually might turn out that these are good but not sufficient.
And I think what we're saying there is just a very general framing, those broad concepts of importance, evidence, the reliability of the measures, the fact that they're usable and feasible in whichever context you're talking about, we think would still logically apply. There's a whole lot of words that associated with that could change dramatically when you're talking about a community context versus a clinical context, I think. Yeah.
Are we open to science from other places?
Absolutely.
Because the science and the conceptual frames that orient science are different in different countries and in different cultures. The Canadians, for example, have historically taken an entirely different approach to how they orient their both public health and medical care system and their approach to having a healthy population. And for some reason, that orientation doesn't take place, that kind of orientation doesn't happen here. And I'm wondering whether that has something to do with how we accept evidence, or whether, so the question is, what are we open, what is NQF open to, and what is NQF historically open to, and is that another door that needs to be opened?
It's because those Canadians just don't know how to make money. The other issue is even the sciences of public health are not the same as the sciences of clinical medicine and bench science, and so that's the other issue we're going to have to look at is, and I've had that discussion with some of the IOM committees about, you know, are observational studies science or not? Well, if you're dealing at the level of a population, they may be the best you have.
And actually, I think as you see, as we walk through each of the criteria, every single one of these issues is going to come up. We're going to come up to it as soon as we get to the importance criteria. So you want to hold or go?
Well, I guess I have a thought that there may be something important that's not in those four, but maybe it comes in under importance, and that's the question about who's accountable, following on what I was saying before. So I think that implicit in all the standard NQF measures is that the healthcare system is responsible for doing this for the patients. And I think that in the population health realm, it's not quite clear who is responsible for doing various things, and sorting that out may be important.
So how is it that only somewhere between 40 and 50% of people with a diagnosis of hypertension are controlled? Who's accountable? How, if you take 5 diabetic parameters, 20 to 25% of diabetics have them controlled. Who's accountable? So that's my issue with that. I mean, what does accountability mean if our care is so bad?
Well, that's the question that I think the measures have to address. I mean, I think that any health plan would say, well, we're not accountable for those people who aren't in our plan. Sometimes they'll say, we're not accountable for the ones who don't come to see us. Right, and so on. But, you know, the community may feel a responsibility for getting that to happen. And then you can say, well, who's going to do something about that? Well, it may be that someone needs to do some screening, or it may be that someone needs to do some education, or it may be that somebody else needs to do something else about that, or it may be that the facilities aren't there for doing the testing, someone needs to provide them, or it may be that health and their employers may need to say that's part of the package that we buy. That be done. So you can imagine that different entities in the community have different things they could do to reach that goal. And I think that part of what we need is to how to sort that out.
And we've tried to actually weave that through, as you'll see here. Oftentimes the criteria would have said organizations or providers, and we've just said for the accountable entity or entities. I mean, I think that's going to be one of the issues, and I think increasingly, if you look at the measures we've been trying to move towards, like, for example, readmission measures, there is a movement towards trying to move towards measures that reflect shared accountability. And I think what we're really trying to get at is where is that shared locus of the high priority areas where we could share that responsibility. And I think it'll oftentimes be more than one accountable entity. Did you want
to? Yes, I just wanted to comment because Mike led us to a way of thinking that really hasn't been reflected in our framework, even though it is inherent. And that is the whole notion of the cultural norms of the community. And I don't mean culture in a very narrow way, ethnicity or race. It's how are things done within our community around health. And that determines so many responses to what we consider our larger system initiatives all across this country. And I do think that you're right that Canada identifies that more clearly in looking at their approach to evidence-based practice, where the consumer has much more to say about what he or she wants to pay for, what he or she prefers as a mode of treatment. So as we're thinking about community, I want to be sure that we get all those normative factors somewhere in our assessment process looking at measures.
So I'd like to suggest that this is actually one of our lever points. The NQF has given us the draft evaluation criteria, and I think we need to budget our time. My understanding is that Helen's going to go through this chunk by chunk. Let's budget our time so we get through each chunk and get the major comments down, because I think with some of the specifics here, we can really start to move the needle. And then we do want to come back to these general comments after this and the next session and say, what's not there? But so, Helen, how about if you go through these chunks and let's feel free to say, you know, these are good comments. Let's have a mechanism for people to write them down and send them to you so at least we get to discuss all the aspects.
And I believe Nicole and Alisa are up there, in fact, to capture those comments that will return to our parking lot. So thank you, ladies. So it's on the screen. I must admit I must need new contact lenses or that's unreadable. But you do have this, the exact thing we're working off of is in your packet. It's called Attachment 4, the NQF Measure Evaluation Criteria. Let's just walk through it. So the first thing is that we have a set of conditions for consideration. Before we'll even look at the measures, there are several conditions that are always met. I think would be similar. We want to make sure the measures are in the public domain or a steward agreement's been signed. We need a responsible entity to maintain these measures. Part of what we try to do is science changes. Some is how to update these measures, bring them back to us every 3 years, which is why you're going to get to look at some of these other measures coming up. C, there is an interesting one, and I think it's one we may need to spend a little bit of time on, which is that the intended use of the measure is both for public reporting and those other accountability applications, like say performance or accreditation, as well as quality improvement. So we've recognized there are many, many measures that have been used in the QI space only. They work beautifully in that space, but if they're not rising to the level of actually being used to compare or provide, you know, used for accountability, we have not traditionally brought them into the NQF portfolio. So I think that's one thing. We may just want to think about how that plays in the context. Yeah.
So just on this chunk, I'd like to suggest that as a general thing that we've looked at throughout. So it says the both and is really good, but the idea that it might not be the same measure that's used for both and. So there might be some measures that need to be different. Mm-hmm. And then in B, where it says clinical intervention, wherever there's clinical, it should be a search look and what needs to be in the right column. So there could be community and population health interventions. With the both and idea under E, in the right column, it says provider level versus population level. So I think what we're hearing here is probably provider, community, and population level, and not versus, but probably that's a both and among those three domains. I think that's one of the ideas we're hearing here. Yes, the provider level is good, the population level is, but the population level is more than the aggregation of those clinical measures. And so thinking about provider, community, and population is something to, is a way to reframe it.
I also think that what do we mean by harmonization? Because it shouldn't mean that in my practice everyone has an A1C of less than 7 in my hospital service area, in my community, and that's what it means to line up. Because that's going to say too clinical. There may be, for example, in tobacco, there may be a measure of at the provider level of how many people are identified as smokers and counseled. at the behavioral level, how many people access quit lines, and at the community level, are there clean indoor air laws, what are the tobacco taxes, and things like that. So those are harmonized, but they're not the same measure added up and down the system.
And that's actually not what we are intending. Truly, it's harmonization. And some of this really comes down to harmonization, and some of this reflects the science issues that have been brought up. So if there's one consensus way of measuring smoking, would it be useful to have a community survey match in some way? I think there are opportunities there to make sure that we, in fact, are all offering off that same, you know, reading off that same hymnal of saying, funny thing for me to say, but, you know, being able to actually understand that we're talking about the same thing.
So one is a matter of scale. You take an individual measure of scale to the population, and the other is really harmonization. Are these complementary measures designed to achieve the same end?
And avoiding when there is competing, which is what we often encounter. So you may get, it's also not helpful if there are two standardized measures that may be used at those different levels but give you a very different message if you're the provider in that community versus thinking of yourself as a community provider. So I think we're just trying to, I think there's a lot more to do here, and this is probably a good area to come back to as we try to further explore that framing of what's community. Did you have a comment back there?
Well, since we were talking about E, just an observation, it strikes me that the harmonization piece requires the population measure to not compete and to be harmonized with all of these other types of measures that are clinical, as well as community we just spoke of. But when I look at the clinical measure, that harmonization with the population and community measure is not a requirement. So it just strikes me that the burden, if you will, on the population measure is far greater.
And that's not our intent. Our intent is, in fact, that the clinical measure should have the equivalent burden. And, in fact, the harmonization goes both ways. That's really the intent of this discussion.
Okay. So then with the wording in that left column, change as well, since you added wording in the right column requiring that harmonization?
Potentially. NQF does relook at its overall evaluation criteria on an annual basis, and I think part of what we've been seeing as we've gone into these newer areas, we've emerged with newer guidance, and at times I think some of that newer guidance needs to get built into the overall criteria for NQF as these become more mainstream. Yes, exactly. That's exactly, I think, where we are. That's very helpful framing.
Again, forgive me if I don't fully understand how the process works, but it seems to me that harmonization is between the clinical measures and the community measures. But there's another element, which is the measurement of inequities, and I'm not sure whether that's a separate piece or whether that gets included here. I haven't incorporated, but I think it. It's here already. Oh, okay.
All right. We're moving. All right. So we're going to keep moving, and actually I would jump us ahead to the very first real set of criteria, the first criteria. The rest of this is sort of more boilerplate. Let's go to number one there, sort of the middle of page two, which is actually our must, this is a must-pass criterion for NQF, which is importance to measure and report. Importance to measure and report has three elements to it. The first is that it's high impact. The second is that there's a performance gap, and the third is that there's an evidence base for the measure focus. So we'll go through each of them in detail, but that's the broad framing of this. We don't evaluate measures further. We actually don't care if they're reliable, usable, or feasible if they're not important. So this is the must-pass. In our hierarchy, we then look at the science of the measure in terms of reliability and validity, and if that is not there, we also stop. So those are our two stop points. But importance is probably, I think, the most important framing for us today as it relates to the discussion we've had before. So in the overall discussion up top here, we specifically said improving healthcare quality and outcomes. The question was, should we add population to that or community and see if you think the draft language that's in here is helpful? And then there was this question that keeps coming up about accountability. And we thought, since it's been brought up a couple times, it would be useful to put that in here. Again, these are just straw man language for you to react to. Paul's got his pen out, so please let us know.
Yeah, I'm looking across from one in column B there, and it's, again, very healthcare-oriented. Importance to making significant gains in healthcare quality and improving health outcomes of a specific population, by which that means to be like a diabetic or hypertensive, for a specific high-impact aspect of healthcare where there's variation. So this is all still purely aimed at healthcare, it seems. So we really, again, have to, if in fact we're looking at population health, then we need to introduce that concept.
Right, and specific population here was not intended to be diabetic or anything like that. It was supposed to be literally getting at a community. That was not the intent of at least our draft language.
Because it also could, it could mean by specific population, my population as a doctor or as a hospital or as an insurer. So we have to really be clear what we mean.
The other thing that Paul's getting is healthcare quality. There are other aspects of quality. So we have a community guide. I mean, we have public health community preventive services. So there could be quality that's about more than healthcare.
There's this problem with this word population. It's creating so much difficulty everywhere. People are so confused about it everywhere I go. So you're saying here a specific population, but you mean a community, a defined community.
But even the word community is one of those meaningless words.
I think that what we need to do is be specific about what we mean and understand that it could mean different things in different contexts. Mm-hmm. That traditionally in NQF work, it's referred to as a group of people who are part of a plan or see a doctor in a given year. But in population health work, it could be people who live in a certain place, or I can imagine being defined another way, but it's important just to be specific about what we mean by it in any given session.
Maybe we can, let's park this up there, because when we talked to the LA group again, they attempted some definitions. Let's see if what they came up was good enough. But I have a feeling this is going to be something we're going to keep going back at, and hopefully we'll get right. Yeah.
Well, this is something that will need more work. So Robert suggested earlier the idea of a logic model. So when you're talking about impact, the impact here is beyond healthcare quality. And so the impact has to start looking at population measures of health. You can define that as the whole country, a state, a community. You can define that in different ways. But it's raising the gaze from the healthcare of the individual to other determinants of health for groups of
people.
We're not going to solve this here, but this is where a logic model about how would you measure impact for, and what does quality look like at the population and community level for the things that we can measure and the things that we can then intervene on that meet your other core criteria that have an effect on health at that group level. And then that's going to beg the denominator question of how do you define the group.
So would it help just to say, I mean, that word specific, instead of saying specific, just say for a defined population group, a defined population group?
Maybe just defined population.
Helen, is what we're going to do here is we're going to get a sense from the group discussion. Will there be a chance for people to send things, and then there'll be an aggregation of this? And this is going to take multiple iterations. We're not going to be able to wordsmith this here as this group. Is that the process we're
engaging? Absolutely. And that was part of the logic, again, of I don't want people to feel like we're sort of putting community second. I don't think we were ready to ask for community measures right now, because I think we need to get this straightened out first. So that was the idea of doing the foundational work while we kind of do our more traditional kind of measurement, think through these issues, and then be able to call for measures and actually be able to evaluate them in the second phase. Or else I wouldn't know how to evaluate these
measures. There's one aspect of this that we're way ahead of everybody else, is we've already called into question what we don't know. Because how many groups have you been on where they just keep using the word population and community, all talking about different things, and nobody says we're all talking about different things. So at least we flagged it at the beginning. There's one other thing, across from one, the notion of specific accountable entity. Because, it's going to be hard in population health. It may have to be entities. For example, an accountable care organization is an entity made up of an insurer, providers, hospitals, all kinds of other things. There are also, through the some of the new ACA initiatives, Communities Putting Prevention to Work, which is actually before ACA, where it's a consortium that's held accountable, sometimes led by the political leadership, sometimes by clinical, sometimes in Iowa it's led by the business leadership, but some entity has to say, okay, we're going to be held accountable for that and achieve it. Mm-hmm. But it's not likely to be one legal incorporated entity. Mm-hmm. Matt, and then Bobby after that.
That was going to be my point as well, just to elaborate a bit. watching the evolution of IHI's Triple M initiative. It started with a hodgepodge of organizations, some governmental, some insurers, some providers, almost in all cases. In order to achieve the triple aim, these groups realized that it required the efforts of a multi-stakeholder collaboration to achieve population health especially. And so they've all moved in the direction of, some very explicitly, in a multi-stakeholder coalition. So I think it's important enough to, while you could say the specific accountability entity is the multi-stakeholder coalition, that doesn't lead you necessarily to that. And it's so important in population health that it's worth specifying.
How would you specify differently, Matt? Just be curious your thoughts.
The link to the notion of shared accountability among different stakeholder groups is the notion here that I think is so critical for population health improvement. And that's a very different concept than the language here of a specific accountability entity.
Well, on the last point, I think it's both and rather than either or. Shared accountability doesn't mean that nobody's accountable. At least that's the frame that I have in my head. Shared accountability and a partnership model,
right,
can lay out within that partnership and that collaborative
who's responsible within their own domains
for doing specific things. And the successful partnerships, the ones that actually produce better health outcomes, do that. They don't just say, let's go. They say, first of all, and that's... We do an assessment in our community, and we understand something about the status, health status, life status, quality of life status of people in our community, and we recognize that, and we not only have what our status is, but we're able to contrast it with some other community to say, here's a difference here. And that difference leads to conversations about, there shouldn't be that difference, and we'd like to do something about that. And everybody goes around the table and says, well, okay, yes, that's right. So there's the first consensus
step.
The second step is to say, okay, now we have the difference. What are we going to do about that?
Right.
And everybody says, okay, that's right. So there's the look around the table, and everybody holds hands through a very difficult process, and they say, here's what I'm going to do. If you've got a real quality improvement process, you don't get stuck on trying to do the best thing first. You just get started and establish a process where you're constantly contrasting differences over time, recognizing whether those differences are shrinking or not. So it's a both and process. It's shared, and there are specifics within it. The reason specific obligations within it, and it works. The reason why I raised my pocket before is to make suggestions to the chairs and to the staff, because of the way the agenda has been framed to look at what are clinical preventive, and I emphasize the clinical, it might be wise, as one or all or several are discussed, to reserve a few minutes in that discussion to ask ourselves, how does this translate to community? Because it's the discussion over time that will help us take the kinds of approaches that are being suggested here. We're not going to, for the ease of the chairs and the staff, you don't have to reach consensus on what the community measure would look like, but it will begin to give us a peek into what does it mean to think about something in a clinical way, in a community way. If we were looking at obesity or heart disease or some other, what in essence is a clinical outcome, we could ask ourselves, what do we think from a community perspective are really causing those outcomes? And it isn't the clinical intervention measure that we're looking for, it's the measure on the community side. So it's just a suggestion of how to begin to weave into the discussions here what will be useful for the staff, because you're so clinically oriented, and that's not a criticism, it's just, you know, the nature of the work that you've been doing. Gets to your point, Paul, which is it could potentially be a conflict of cultures, and if we're successful, it will be a blending of the cultures, and what we accomplish is the push from NQF, which is seen as a reputable
entity on the clinical side becoming a reputable entity pushing on the community side, which is what those of us on the community side, I think, would like to have happen.
So, Bobby, it's a great suggestion, as always. And one thing I would suggest is we also look at it from, I mean, what's labeled behavioral in that NVP concept, and I don't like that term necessarily, but there are those questions about, you know, we could have clinical set, community set, but people don't take advantage of it. So we really want to look at, okay, what are the social norms, the drivers, the other things that will enable people to make the healthy choice once available. So I think looking at all three levels could be important. I had Ron, then Larry, then Matt.
And just a processing, after we do these questions, Helen, I wonder if some of these other ones, the comments that will come up are similar to the general point that we've had, except for 2C on disparities. And I wonder if we, since we have 10 minutes left, and I think we should end this at quarter of, if we want to make sure after we do these comments, if we jump to that and save a little time so that we at least get a group discussion of that. And if there are important things people have to say on some of the other ones that didn't come up, you'll tell us how to get those to you.
I'd like to quickly do evidence as well, because I think it's an important one that's already been raised.
I'd like to build on Bobby's comment for a moment. And I'm wondering if under the population health measure evaluation, you know, the additional guidance and context, if we could benefit from there being two columns. One column being the clinical preventive services, and the other being the community preventive services and interventions. Because when I think about changing all of this language and all of the wordsmithing, it may become incredibly confusing and provide less guidance, because the way we think about the clinical preventive services may be different than the way we think about the community preventive services. It's just a thought to throw out there rather than trying to fit everything into the same set of criteria, same set of guidance for us.
Sorry. Okay, Matt.
No. And it's probably gotten a little out of phase. Helen asked if I had a suggestion for accountable entity. I actually think there's nothing wrong with being specific and clear about accountability. The idea is just to make sure that it's broad enough. So maybe just a parenthetical statement, specific accountability, including multi-stakeholder groups. It's not sufficient just to have the stakeholders at the table. There still needs to be clear accountability.
Okay, moving right along. So let's quickly, page 3 there, let's just quickly keep going through importance. But again, this is not your last look at it. Disparities is specifically listed under the promise gap as well, so I just want to mention that there is a requirement as part of our evaluation that there's a demonstration this is a problem. There's a performance gap in this area. It does include specifically quality. Again, this is quality of care. We'll need to potentially round that out, but quality of care across providers and our population groups. So I think that's something we wanted to specifically understand, this issue of variation. How would you look at variation across communities, for example? How is it a different framing of whether there's a performance gap in a given measure?
It's also within communities, so you can have two communities, yeah.
Yes. And that's why it specifically says included but not limited to disparities. We're trying to look within communities at populations as well.
And I think my comment is probably more global about this section specifically, but probably goes all the way through, and that's the use of the word patient. It doesn't communicate well in communities, as well as I don't think that's what we're getting at with a full population. So that would be the one thing, and, you know, especially in disparities, you don't always consider someone a patient, and there's a lot of nomenclature issues in those populations when talking about patients.
Yeah, along the same lines, maybe a global search and replace for things like care and patient. So disparities in care is too narrow. It's also disparities in the determinants and outcomes of health that we care about.
Michael and Larry.
My point was actually going to be similar to that, that this idea about performance works well in the world where we think about process measures primarily. But I think that outcomes is more important to bring in here, and maybe even broader in this sense.
The reason I brought this up earlier, in our organization, we do a lot of work on health equity as a kind of a fundamental element of our work, and always with the community as the level of analysis. And one of the things we found commonly is that the indicators that are available are the indicators that are not measuring the things that our thinking indicates are most important. And that troubles me, and that's why I brought this up actually at the beginning in terms of the overarching rather than as a subset of this. And I don't know what the purview of this group is in terms of one of the criteria being kind of available measures. But I think somewhere, in some way, as part of the credibility of this, it's important to indicate that there are some very important measures that are lacking, or at minimum, that are inconsistent between different communities. For example, some of the work that was done recently by Robert Wood Johnson called MATCH, which is looking at counties that I'm sure Bobby's probably one of the most familiar with, because it's looking at a county-wide level. Oakland, Alameda County, where I come from, rated very, very high. And when I look at what's going on in Oakland, there are horrible inequities that are not showing up because there's a measure of the data that's used. And I think it's a really good example of unintended consequences. So I just want to note this. I don't know, Helen, exactly where it fits here, but I think it's an issue of critical importance, or otherwise we'll continue to drive things in the wrong direction and say, see, we're making progress.
No, Larry, we really tried to address this issue with the NPP process, in which we introduced the World Health Organization concept from 2002, which is that you need to have a measure of goodness and a measure of fairness. The measure of goodness is the average performance. The measure of fairness is the difference between the healthiest and least healthy, or the most and least disparate group. We could not get that through the NPP. They couldn't. It was considered a, quote, new concept, and they didn't want to introduce a new concept. So, but I would want to bring that back here to say, you know, a perfect measure would not only tell you the average infant mortality, but it would also at the same time tell you the difference between, let's say, the Caucasian and African-American, Caucasian and Native American, whatever the appropriate population is. Without that, you know, well, like you said, how could Oakland possibly be considered a healthy place if you walk through much of it, or at least...
So it's the equivalent of the confidence interval.
Some of that will come up as we talk about the scientific acceptability of the measuring properties. We talk a lot about the precision of the specifications to get at a level of analysis most appropriate to be able to see where you want to be. And that might be an interesting issue, is it to the most granular level to be able to see the differences.
But even forcing because again, this is we all awfulize about health equity. But until we actually force the system to look at it, and you can force the system by saying your measure has got to have an average goodness and a disparity component. At the same time, though, it's going to be a gap because we don't have it.
Yeah.
But if we don't require it or push it, it's just never going to happen.
And I think also on that point that there are some, when we look and we did research on this, on what the underlying community health factors are that relate to the key behaviors and most important leading causes of death. And we looked at the 10 leading causes of death, most of which are also the 10 leading places of inequity and cost and disability and hospitalization. And we came up with 13 community factors that we've laid out and have identified. We had a very, very hard time, and we're working on it again, but identifying indicators. It's not even a question of, it's a different set of indicators that we need if we're going to talk, for example, about quality of social interaction. You know, and you can guess things. You can say, well, maybe it's percentage of people voting, but it takes us very, very far afield when we talk about harmonization from patient-oriented. You know, it's not just replacing the word patient, but it's a very, very different way of thinking. And I really think it's important, and it's one of the main reasons I'm here, to emphasize this very important paradigm shift, even if we can't get there right away, but to be very clear that, at least from my perspective, that's the goal that has to be reached, not only in population, but as someone said before, in starting to shift the clinical measures as well, so that clinical thinking starts to think more about the community factors that make people sick or injured in the first place.
Reva, and then Mike.
Just to respond to Larry's comments about available measures, in the last decade that NQF has been doing this, this has been a common theme of whenever we do these projects, the measures we have available are usually, almost invariably, less
than what people want. And there is this general shared sense of, yeah, okay, but they're not what we're looking for. And that has just been a common theme. So there is nothing new happening here. We have seen evolution over time. It is slow. But 10 years ago, the idea of an outcome measure just was not even considered, and now they are pretty much what we do. So things do change, but availability of measures is one of our serious issues for everybody, and it really would depend on the measure development world, you know, who is creating those measures, and what is the, what are the incentives for them to develop those measures so that you have them. And it's going to be the same issue for you all that, that we've certainly seen in pretty much everything else in the measurement world. So the one avenue you have is certainly to identify what those measures are, be specific about what you're looking for and what we need.
Matt, you put yours down, so maybe Sue and then Bobby. And then and we have like 2 minutes left, so let's be...
So I'm going to be quick, and I hope what I have to say is relevant. I think what Larry said is extremely important, because when we do these broad-based measures of what the community looks like, how many people have heart disease, what is the asthma rate, and we take it to the community, they raise their hand and say, yeah, we know that, but that's not what's important to us. What's important to us is livable wage jobs, our kids graduate from high school, and nobody gets shot on the way. And so those are some kind of the measures that we, in order to make this even acceptable, I guess, to the communities we're writing it for.
So we're moving more toward that concept of well-being and less clinical illness. So.
Helen, what you were doing was walking us through attachment four and pointing out to us how the typical N2F evaluation criteria have been modified or could be modified to better address the population health measure context. And this conversation has been about that it needs further revisions in order to be useful. And yet, later on today, we're going to be looking at what are ostensibly population or well, so my assumption was, let me start there, that we're going to be looking at what some people might think are population health measures, because, and that's the reason why that's what this group is. And so if, in fact, the guidance and context need to change further, how are we accomplishing the work we're supposed to be accomplishing here if, in fact, we don't have the criteria and guidance correctly specified before we go about doing our work?
I think the measures that are before you today are clinical, and I think they fit our usual paradigm,
yes,
which is why we actually held off on giving you any of the ones that were submitted that look more population health-oriented until you have an evaluation criteria that will effectively allow you to look at those measures.
So what we shouldn't be thinking we're doing today or over the course of these meetings is actually the real work of this group?
I think we could look at ourselves as grounding ourselves in the N2F methodology. And so we have that foundation as we try to go forth. Because, you know, and frankly, if we all sat down in the room and tried to take population health on now, what a immensely complex task. So let's, I'm glad we're starting somewhere that some of this has been worked out. So I've been negotiating with Kurt on your behalf, Matt. You may get the last comment here.
I'm not sure which page that is. I think that framework is not sufficient for the work of this group in that evidence, sort of causal pathway of outcomes, intermediate clinical outcomes, patient experience, and efficiency is not broad enough for the work of this group. That's a very clinical focus. It, for example, doesn't include behaviors. And also doesn't include the social and environmental determinants. So in the causal pathway for this work, it, I think, needs to explicitly include and articulate that we're talking about, I mean, behaviors is one of the stated purposes, and the community or social and environmental determinants are critical in the causal pathway that we're talking about but aren't listed here.
frankly, are critical in the clinical pathway. I mean, if you look at a patient with chronic illness that sees their doctor every quarter and pretend it's half an hour, that's 0.02% of their life, 99.98% of life there determining the care and their health. And so it really ought to be part of the clinical measures also.
Just to tee up for our last second, if we could, just if you go look at 2C, and we can return to it this afternoon as we have our discussions, but 2C on page 6 is what we currently have for disparities, and since it's been so prominent, I want to at least put it on the table here. We have traditionally been trying, and again, this has been a bit of a forcing function on our part, to ask that measures be stratified. Nicole and Robin have been leading our efforts here by race, ethnicity, SES, whatever the case may be. What we're often finding is it's more dependent on the data platform than it is the measure itself. And I think it would just be helpful for us to have a discussion, and maybe not right now, but maybe in the afternoon discussion or after we figure out what population and community are and how disparities fits into that. Perhaps we could just talk about, is there ever a justification, for example, for not including stratified data?
There are two sides to that, so we should talk about it, because you take the Alabama Health Department that doesn't have two nickels to rub together and a really sick population and compare it to L.A. where everyone's too skinny and goes to health clubs. Who's doing a better job? Which community is doing a better job? And so there may be a place to look at risk adjustments.
So let me make a couple summarizing comments and suggest we actually do take the break, because we need to clear our heads, and the next part is really another high-impact thing that we're doing that's about the stuff we all care in. So what I heard is some of the charges that we've received is to just, there's kind of a searching function looking for keywords like patient care, health care, and just thinking about people and health and well-being for some of those things that are about disease and patients. Another is actually to start with the right column and think about that, about the same entities, rather than transferring over from the left column. So starting with populations and thinking about how you want to measure that, what level you want to measure that. Think about community as a participation community, starting that right column, what would that look like? Really important points that we actually heard from Andy, Robert, and Matt about who's the responsible entity. So they talked about shared responsibility, partnership, accountability that includes a multi-stakeholder group. That's a huge refrain from one organization that you can hold the toes to the fire. But if you look at how to make things useful and feasible, that's going to be the transformative stuff. So that's a huge refrain. So think about what that means for the right column. And thinking about some of these, what's there is a little word of disparity, what that means for equity and how you think about that for the two populations. So that's a ton of work to do for a next draft. And then I assume we should, if we have other comments, we should email those to Elisa, or and then you will give this back to us sometime and we'll have a chance to revisit this and iterate this.
Okay, so 11 o'clock, the LA folks are calling in, so let's take a 5-minute break and be back at 11.
Let's break the tendon.
Operator?
Anthony.
Anthony?
Yes.
Hi, this is Elisa. I wanted to know if Don Jacobson was on the line or Stephen Teutsch. They're both on? Okay, great. We're on a break until 11, and at 11 o'clock, could you open up your lines, please? Thank you very much. Operator?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I don't know if Stephen Toich and Don Jacobson are on the call.
Yes, they are connected.
Okay, great. Don?
Hi,
it's Elisa. How are you? Good. Can you see the screen? Can you see the slides?
So he's going to need it.
So why don't we reconvene here? Okay.
Okay, I can barely hear you. I'm going to try and change locations, okay? Don and Steve, if you can hear me, I can barely hear you. The speaker isn't projecting too well. We have the slides up. If you can't see them, we would just, if you could just proceed or just give us a cue to move the slides.
Okay. Can you hear me better now?
I can. Perfect. Hi,
okay,
Steve. Okay. So we'll be starting in just a few minutes, okay?
Okay.
Okay, great. Hi.
I just opened a slide from Helen. This might seem
okay, Don, can you say that one more time? I'm going to go closer to the speaker. I'm sorry.
Helen has sent us five slides from the previous ILS presentation.
Those are just informational slides that Mike Soto wanted me to share with you that might come up as we go through the discussion further about population versus community that we thought might just be useful, but you should just proceed with your presentation. I think it'll be a lively discussion if we're ready to proceed.
Actually, two things. Can you somehow get a lot closer to your microphone because we're really screening? And the other warning I should give you is that your framing of this, which is nice, but into the clinical care and public health system, I think you're already going to get a lot of pushback about something that's really about social and environmental determinants of health and about community as well as just for the classic population. So just to forewarn you.
Okay, so we can barely hear you. You may have to pick up a handset if you're able.
Okay, our technician is out for just a few minutes. He'll be back, and we're going to try and see if there's something we can do on our end to make sure you project a little better, okay?
Try again right now, please.
Can you hear me now?
Slightly.
I mean, I can talk a little bit louder if that helps.
Yeah, that little bit louder helps. If you could even a little bit louder than that, would be great.
Okay, oh. I'm going to be doing most of the talking, so why don't you say something, Don?
Well, I'm not on a headset. Sometimes a headset causes problems. You might want to not use the headset.
I'm just using a handset. I'm talking directly into the telephone.
Oh, I thought you said headset. Okay. Can you guys hear me okay? Hello?
We seem to hear Steve, but not you, Don. They're still very soft.
I have the volume as high as I can go. Oh, here, you know what? Here, let me try something. Can you hear me better now? Hello?
That was actually worse.
I think you just need to practically shout into your phone.
Yeah, I already am. The mic is on now.
That was fine.
It's fine now?
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us. We, in the room, I'd say there's about 25 different folks from both public health, clinical, insurance, as well as business groups and others, governmental positions, HHS, who are very interested in hearing about the paper you've begun to work, and I think very interested in providing feedback as we all stretch to really define better some of these terms and some of the concepts here. And want to thank you, Steve and Dawn, for taking this first stab at it in what is a very complex area to actually try to nail down these definitions. We were actually thinking this morning that the work you're doing here is a good start forward, because many groups have these discussions without attempting to define what they're talking about. So I want to thank you for taking a stab at this, and please lead off.
Great. Thank you so much, Kurt, and thanks to all of you for allowing us to work with you on this this project. Don and I have been now involved with performance measures for a long time, but we were first asked by NQF to consider working on this paper just about 3 weeks ago, and it wasn't until last week that we actually were told to go ahead. So what you're having from us is some of our initial thoughts about this work, and it's an area that that we're excited to work on, and we're excited to work with all of you. I do know many of you, and sorry that we cannot be here, be there with you, so thanks for allowing us to do it by phone. The person who is going to be doing the lion's share of the work on our end and drafted most of the outline that you saw is Dawn Jacobson, so she'll be doing the presentation this morning. And I hope most of you had the chance to review that, because the slides are obviously only going to be able to do a have a brief synopsis of some of the ideas. And then we're looking forward to hearing from you what you're going to need so that we can flesh this out and modify it to meet your needs. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dawn, and hopefully you all can see her slides. Do you have your slides up, Kurt?
Yes.
Great. So, Dawn, why don't you go ahead?
Hey, good morning, everyone. Very good to be part of this project. Just so you know, I cannot see the slides on the webinar, so I'm just using my own slide set, and I will try to be sure to say advanced slide, and Elisa, if you can just let me know periodically if we're in sync, that would be great.
I will.
So, before I even begin, we definitely acknowledge there's a lot of different terminology and a lot of different ways that concepts can be defined. And so we definitely look forward to hearing how you choose to define them. Next slide, please. The proposed analytic framework is really based on a gentleman who created an approach to measurement maybe in the late 90s by the name of Mark Friedman. Some of you may have heard of him.
Yes.
He worked at the State of Maryland Department of Finance. He had a long career in the public sector. And created an approach that we think is very helpful in that it clearly distinguishes sort of what these population health big picture goals for various levels of community are from these sort of organization-specific, provider-specific, program-specific goals that links them very nicely. And again, the concept that Friedman has proposed is that any public agency and really any system that would consider improving population health as a primary objective could then apply this to sort of framework. Next slide, please. So then it sort of begs the question then, you know, what systems, how do we define systems, what types of providers work in these systems? And again, we all know it's very complex. We all work in different aspects of these different systems. What this slide shows, and what the proposed framework would be, is really taking the Institute of Medicine definition of the public health system being this network of partners. And you'll see on, sort of on the left, the third bullet, the public health system is very large, can be work sites, schools, other sort of public agency systems that might have health as an objective, especially in social determinants related to health. The loosely connected nonprofit system, and there's others, you know, that we could list there, and I'm sure everybody will have something else they want to put in that sort of catch-all category. But what we thought would be helpful for framing is that we would focus on then the two systems, the clinical care system, healthcare system, medical care system, whichever, you know, term we choose to use, and sort of this network of units that deliver governmental public health activities, because those are really the two systems that clearly have health and wellness as a part of their vision and mission. And then by keeping those three categories very, you know, distinct where possible, then there would be providers or practitioners, and again, choose your term, that would then reflect delivery of services within those systems. And so we propose sort of three systems and three types of providers. Next slide, please. And this is a way of very simply showing the connections that Mark Friedman really created. And so what you'll see in the next few slides is that this sort of linkage for population health improvement and what an organization or system that we propose would do, the types of activities that would lead to planning, getting to agreement on what collectively we do to improve population health through shared accountability, shared work, who does the types of planning, who does the types of measuring, and we didn't quite get into quality improvement with our examples, but really, again, the clinical care system, the public health system has been doing these things sort of separate but in parallel, and I liked the comment earlier this morning about complementary activities and metrics that might not be identical. So if you focus on the blue box for a moment, we can define this out, you know, population health needs, but if we think about sort of even the U.S. Constitution and the delegation of who does the health and welfare of the country, we consider this sort of the public good, the common good of population health that different systems would then work together to ensure and move forward. And you'll see inside the blue box, we put health outcomes, which we'll talk about in a minute, behaviors, and then social determinants, so the more upstream determinants that would then influence the health and welfare of populations. Who directs that planning? I heard comments about who's the owner of these types of activities. A lot of these sort of common good public health planning activities have really been done by the governmental public health system in some areas of the country in partnership with the clinical care system or the nonprofit system as part of these, you know, state community health assessments improvement plans. And part of the framework we're getting a handle on sort of what different areas and, you know, levels of community have really prioritized over time and kind of do a scan and better understand that. But then you have this green box of which it's whatever system you choose to focus on, which we'd like to focus on the two primarily, you have organizational sort of performance and things you want to do well, and then really provider level. And these are oftentimes reflected in organizational strategic plans, division operational plans, and even very specific work plans or quality improvement efforts that would happen in a clinic or a public health program. And these activities are occurring, measurement and improvement, really, in both of those systems. But it starts with planning, of course, and sort of understanding who might have ownership and how we would integrate those over time. Next slide, please. This is just a quick reminder that when you think about population health improvement, there's a lot of competing, competing is the right word, indicator sets. So you have at the national level things like, you know, the new strategic priorities coming out of health reform. You have Healthy People, which has been around for 4 decades. You have Trust for America's Health. You have sort of national level priorities for population health improvement, and then they report and measure things certain ways. But that cascades down to maybe a state plan, and then if you go to the very top of the pyramid, I put county or community-based organization, but you could put accountable care organization plan. Kaiser, you know, has a lot of sort of population health improvement activities they do for their immediate population and sometimes the broader population of a county or a state. But the idea is that it's this complex cascading that I know you're well aware of that really starts with planning. And part of the scan is the understanding sort of who is prioritizing what at different levels. Next slide, please. And then you get to then really the organization level planning. And I don't want to worry about this box so much. That's Mark Friedman's box of how you would sort of write structure, process, and output measures for an organization that's targeting, we use the word client, that's in public health sometimes we don't use the word patient. So sometimes, you know, organizations have very specific, ways that they discuss the people they serve. But on the left, then, is a sort of, what Mark Friedman puts out is how you would target, then, provider-level metrics and really assess how well the organization is performing. And that planning often is very internal to an organization. Next slide, please. So then it gets to, how are we going to select, then, ways to measure performance at these two levels, report, come to some agreement on what types of things you'd be measuring, and so I put some examples of categories of things you could decide to measure. So on the left, again, we have this population health level, and this is a reminder, it's health outcomes, behaviors, and social determinants. And then the types of things that are traditionally measured in the public health community. Life expectancy, quality of life, we talked about disparities in equity, which you can really take any health outcome or behavior and sort of break it down by race, ethnicity, or income and get an idea of equity. Disease, morbidity measures, of course, mortality metrics, early mortality metrics. And then you get to the bottom of the list there, which really gets into more upstream things. You get into behaviors, environment, home, social environment, built environment, that can sometimes point at the population level depending on your data set. So for every sort of thing you would prioritize at a population level, you could sort of decide which categories are most relevant to your work. Then you would move over to the green side and really decide then what priority, high-value clinical and community interventions you would then deliver and measure within or maybe across the systems if there is some commonality. So, of course, what do public health departments measure? We look at policies that are created and cover a percentage of the population, people informed, coalitions, stakeholders that are engaged, timeliness and completeness of surveillance, outbreak investigations. We're moving into social and built environment metrics. And then what I've added to the bottom is really then what I currently see as sort of the provider community. Access might have some overlap, screening, treatment received, patient safety. It would be a way of sort of, again, having these complementary measures across the systems that would then collectively improve population health. Next slide, please. So how do we help you do some of this? We'd like to look at, the current health assessments and improvement plans and see if there are certain priority topics that we could advise you sort of rise to the top. Examples of that would be like the 10 leading health indicators and healthy people, which have been put forth in the past. There's the State of the USA indicators. But again, there's competing sort of groups that want to put forth the top 10 things. And I want to put a little bit of a joke in here. All you have to do is sort of do what Friedman did with CDC and pick 6 winnable battles, and the advocates are lining up to create number 7, 8, 9, 10. So prioritization is hard, but if we could work with you to get to sort of a priority set of these population health impact topic areas, I think would really move understanding of population health forward and what we do to change it. Then we obviously have certain systematic reviews, clinical guides, community guides, which should help inform how we prioritize our interventions in terms of health. And then we move into measurements of what we prioritize. And again, if we can sort of work with you to decide if these two levels work, to keep them sort of in their separate box, and if these sort of proposed 3 systems with focusing on 2 of those is something that would be the way to move forward. Next slide, please. I'm moving into a few examples now of how, working at the local level, how we would I'm not even getting to define community, but once we define community and who would be working towards this, which will vary, of course, all across this country, how to identify common data sources. And what I wanted to introduce to some of you which who have not worked in the public health arena is that, similar to the clinical care system, we have performance databases. Some of them are getting integrated with meaningful use requirements. But some of our just simply, if you go to the right first, you know, right column for a second, some of our just lead surveillance. And we have a standalone database in LA that really lets us understand our activities and performance in that area. And it's not simply measuring a percent of children who have an elevated blood lead level. It's actually our case management measures, what we would consider our public health intervention and how we measure performance of our staff that go out and do those types of case management activities. Of course, it leads into, you know, home investigation, mitigation of lead and lead abatement, but we do have these data sets, in other words. And so we have to do some sort of scan to really at least put forth what we think large urban health centers health departments would have available to provide measurement of their systems. The healthcare system has had about 30 years lead time on this. They've had to put more money, and in some ways it's been more high profile. But we really have to start looking at then how we measure within these systems and link it back to these population data sets. And the example that I put there is just to really show you how in certain communities, like LA County, we have robust data sets, and we have to choose if we're going to use the national birth data, if we're going to use our California Health Interview Survey or our own LA County Health Survey. New York City is similar to this. So vital records, you know, is obviously available at different levels, but we have competing data sets sometimes. Now, those of you who have worked in the county health rankings know that a lot of small counties don't have that. They're lucky to get a data point out of IRFA, period. But we really want to do a scan and understand where in the country we could start moving toward this real integrated shared accountability approach with data. Next slide, please. Then for moving toward improvement, again, we have sort of competing benchmarking sources. In public health, we often look to healthy people to see what the national target is. But there's, again, state, county, there's professional association benchmarking. And again, you can divide these into these two levels, sort of a population level benchmark and then, a system provider level benchmark performance, which could give a nice picture of how to improve over time then within these systems and collectively across the systems. Next slide, please. So then how do we start thinking about these investments we're making in both of these systems? And this is very preliminary. This is something I pulled together a couple of years ago. We can move into much more complex logic modeling and systems modeling. But the idea is that if we can have ownership, some sort of ownership of who does what, it's not going to be easy to figure that out. But at times, there are going to be very clear clinical preventive services that really the clinical care system will do. That being said, of course, there's some health departments in this country that still do primary and specialty care services, and how do we acknowledge that? So there's going to be some overlap. But certain metrics will fit nicely into one of the two systems. And so in this schematic, obviously, clinical care system is on the left and more of the what the health department tends to have, they feel they have sort of ownership and direction over is on the right. Then there's this idea of overlap within the systems and then delivery enhancements, which may or may not have overlap. So this, again, the schematic is not perfect. It's meant to stimulate discussion. But then it's going to be systems changes, whether it's meaningful use, IT integration, whether it's deciding collectively that a certain policy has to be implemented in concert with changes throughout the clinical care system to, increase maximum impact. It's those types of things that we want to try to capture in a logic model. So, next slide, please. So how does that, might that play out? Now, granted, these aren't measures yet. We can start writing measures for these things as well. But we'd like to hinge this on evidence, just like we all do. And there's A and B recommendations from clinical guides. There's recommended interventions from the community guide. And I just took tobacco and put them in the Venn diagram. And we can start assigning ownership and then who would measure them and the data sources that would measure that if possible. And we probably can't measure everything, but we can, address that as the issue comes up. But then there's the system changes that, who really is responsible for reducing client out-of-pocket costs? Is that health plans? Is that a policy that the health department's going to, it could be a series of interventions, but it ends up being sort of big paradigm shifts or systems changes that would school in those yellow boxes. And I kind of put sort of the type of system changes below. And those are obviously recommended in community guides. And that's tobacco. Then if you go to obesity on the next slide, it's a bit more difficult. There's a lot more. And you'll see then, if you go to the community side for a moment, that could be the governmental public health system or other system partners. It starts getting into work sites, school-based, urban design, which, you know, who owns that? But if we can move toward, again, putting it in those three systems, both the evidence-recommended interventions, and then move toward understanding how we measure that complementary and together, I think we could really move measurement and performance and impact of the population health level forward.
Don, I'm sorry to interrupt, but your voice is falling a little bit as you. It's probably fatiguing from speaking so loud. So
Thanks. And we're almost done. So we're just on the last couple slides. So I'll hang in there. So next slide, please. So then this is, Steve can definitely, he's worked in this area for quite a while. We can take this sort of clinical guide and community guide to the next level. And I think the work of the steering committee can then get into other contextual factors have been brought up. I mean, is this of value to the community? Is it feasible? Is it measurable? Do we have, there's all sorts of things that can play into how this committee would then prioritize a set of interventions that's doable. And there's one word of caution that from working in measurement and quality improvement in a public health department, measures can get out of control quickly. Everybody has their favorite metric. And part of what we'd like to do for you is sort of provide some guidance on that. Or if you pick 10 population indicators, for example, population health outcomes, just 10, and we recommend that at least there's one then performance measure that would be seen as influencing that outcome, then if you have the clinical care system and the public health system and the other system measures, you have quickly get to hundreds of measures very quickly. And so as you work through those issues, we'd be glad to talk through, how we've tried to limit measures, but keep them essential over time in LA County. But there's different ways that you can then prioritize these things. And final slide, please. Then how would we like to help you with some deliverables? We'd like to create a matrix, that would really show the synergy for how to prioritize, implement, and measure prevention activities across the two systems. We could recommend 3 or 4 priority areas. You could recommend them to us, but the idea that we'd start making, a more complex logic model of how this cascades and yet is complementary across the systems. I say 2 here. You may decide that you want us to do all 3 and bring in some of these other public health system partners, and we're open to that. It makes the scope a bit bigger, however. And then strategies for how you would collect data and report them and maybe even do quality improvement projects, complementary ones across the two systems. And we very much look forward to a robust discussion.
Thank you, Dawn. This is Paul Harris. So while we were here, Kurt and I and Helen just had a brief interchange to discuss really the purpose of the paper and the purpose of the work. And as I understand it, the work by Steve and Dawn is really done to inform us, the committee, and be a group that can research things or look for things that we need research between meetings and to inform us. So it's not really for an external audience, it is for us. So hopefully that can frame part of our conversation. I have a comment, and not specifically regarding the presentation, thank you for that, Dawn, but more about the paper. And we appreciate the first stab at definitions, because that came up again this morning, and hopefully you're able to listen to part of that. But mine in particular is about the definition of population health from Turnock, because I think that although that's a simple, concise definition, I think it loses some of the other definitions out there. And in particular, it loses the whole aspect of health equity, in that this is, again, talking about overall goodness. It's not talking about goodness and fairness. And I think the 3 other major definitions, which I've been aware of, like, whether it's Kindig or Young or Dunn and Hayes, each hit that. And the Dunn and Hayes definition of 99, the Canadians, actually gets much more into the areas of social determinants and environmental, as well as does include clinical. And so I'd ask you to take a look at those definitions again, because this one, although it's simple and concise, doesn't really capture all the depth of population health. And I'm happy to read one when I do that for you. So this Dunn and Hayes in 99, I believe there were two Canadians, as the Canadians were trying to figure out how do you define population. It's a little bit long. It says the health of a population as measured by health status indicators and as influenced by social, economic, and physical environments, personal health practices, individual capacity and coping skills, human biology, early childhood development, and health services. As an approach, population health focuses on the interrelated conditions and factors that influence the health of populations over the life course, identifies systematic variations in their patterns of occurrence, and applies the resulting knowledge to develop and implement policies and actions to improve the health and well-being of those populations. So it's pretty broad, it's pretty long, but I think it actually is a great conceptual definition.
We're open to other definitions. I think that one thing I've learned in public health practice is keep it short and sweet. But I would say that, you know, to sort of take that definition, I think that very nicely within the Chernock definition, puts more specifics on extend beyond medical treatment, and it really then puts social environmental factors and just lists them. We can look at it finding a way to do that. But also, I mean, I guess one thing I'd like to ask the group is, and I know this from experience, like you start putting definitions out there, and we can advise, but it's even early in this discussion, I think this group needs to figure that out. And, you know, we can find a list of, like, you know, 10 different definitions and have you talk through that. Is that something that you find helpful? Just to give you like every sort of the, you know, the major definitions so you can work through them.
Larry? Hi, Dawn. This is Larry Cohen from Prevention Institute, and maybe I'll just make some general comments as well as responding to that. And the general comments are, I just found your presentation really, really helpful, and also I'm a very big admirer of Mark Friedman's work, and I'm really glad you based it on that. I mean, I do think we have, I don't know if the right word is consensus, but we have a general perspective about the kind of definition we're looking for. And I think it's a definition that's a bit broader. I really like your notion of short and sweet and concise. At least I hope I'm speaking for a lot of people when I say that we need a definition which includes a sense of equity, and also a definition that includes a broader sense of social determinants. I was struck when you were using Mark Friedman's work. You know, I don't know whether he's been doing more recent thinking on these kinds of efforts, but the public health field has evolved a lot, and in particular has evolved in its emphasis on health and well policies and multi-sectoral work, which goes beyond medical care and public health as two main players. And I think a lot of the analyses need to go beyond that. So I would go beyond, for example, community service guide, you know, with things like that that are very helpful. And I would look particularly at the National Prevention Strategy and the National Equity Strategy as places where we really need to bring in content. And, you know, I thought that the Venn diagrams, at least the way they were pictured, there was very, very little overlap between healthcare and public health. It was kind of two almost, I wouldn't say competing, but separate and parallel sets of measures. And the thinking I've been doing and related to the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Innovation and how public health and medical services link is the healthcare playing a much stronger role in identifying, advocating, and intervening in community health. And, you know, I see that as a shift, and I would hope the indicators would be indicative of that kind of shift. And I'm realizing it's a paper we wrote called Community Centered Health Homes is something I want to share with the whole group, as well as you, Dawn and Steve. But that I think that the, at least from my perspective as one committee member, that a movement to a certain extent from the paradigm of the public health system and the medical system as the two systems, and from kind of what they traditionally do, is absolutely required if we're going to be defining quality and best practices in community health. And so I would hope for that kind of reconfiguration. And I think there are a number of people here, and that it could be very, very worthwhile to have some of the discussions about what that looks like, because I hate to just kind of toss that back into your lap and say it's your problem to figure out what I'm talking about. And I actually, you know, my tendency would be to revise the agenda in some way so we could have some of that kind of conversation here in depth, at least as a subcommittee, and really start to define that kind of way of thinking much more effectively.
Thank you for those comments. The recent IOM report that was released on time measurement really looked at two different levels of population health development, you know, in fairly narrow terms. One was sort of the sum of individuals' health, which is traditionally how we've done it in public health. And the other was really looking at the overall health of the communities, which really were not those individual level indicator sums, but really looking at community well-being. And I think one of the questions I would have for you, and it sort of relates to what you were saying, Larry, is how broadly do you want to get into the measures of community health broadly, and that is the health of the community, as opposed to simply the sum of the health of the people in those communities?
I think, and I'll watch the committee's direction, the sense this morning is we very definitely want to get into the health of the community, and that one of the things to consider are the three tiers of community preventative services measured at the community level, patient behavior and behavioral choices, and then third, the community, I shouldn't say patient, excuse me, individuals, people's choices, and then at the third level, the community factors, which will address both social determinants of health and the environment, which will provide people the opportunity to make healthy choices. So I think we want to hit all three levels of those.
Kurt? Donna, see, this is Kurt Stange. If I can intuit your approach using Friedman's results accountability paradigm, that made you focus on the clinical system and then the government's public health system. And it makes some sense. Those are both systems. They both collect data, and they both have resources to then do something with that data toward their somewhat overlapping goals. So those ways that noticing your Venn diagram not terribly overlapping, which probably reflects the reality of the current system, but not where we need to be. There was a really helpful idea in the morning discussion that I think could help you think of a third system that doesn't have that kind of rigid accountability, but the idea of shared responsibility, accountability, or partnership among multi-stakeholder groups. And for the types of problems we're trying to solve here, if we just stick with classic clinical systems, public health systems, and just try to work at the interface between those two, we're not going to get at social determinants of health very well. We're not going to engage the power and potential of participatory community groups, of the business community, and multi-stakeholder groups have the potential to do that and start to address that. So if you look at engaging the business community, they want some shocking things. They are surprising to some people, advocates for the social determinants of health and for controlling the big sucking sound of the healthcare system. So the business community wants us to spend less for healthcare. If you look at the decisions that state governors and county executives and so on are having to make, they're really spending so much for healthcare that they are not able to do anything to help businesses provide jobs. They're not able to do anything for education and other social and environmental and other social determinants of health. And if we just stick within clinical and public health and try to inch forward from those platforms, which we need to do, we're not going to engage the really transformatory partnerships. So if you just take that results accountability platform and think about multi-stakeholder groups,
that might unleash a lot of really creative stuff. So the thing that really I wrote down, Andy and Robert and Matt this morning told us, though, is to think about not just as an other category, not about them as individuals, but what happens when they start working together. And what that lets you do, and there are good examples of this, is it lets you take a whole systems approach. Otherwise, you end up just looking under the light post rather than looking over in the darkness where the real problems and the real transformative solutions are. So if you just add that as a third bullet, you've got public health, you've got clinical health care. Don't make an other when you're thinking about accountability and actionability, thinking about the multi-stakeholder groups. I think that really changes a lot.
I think then we'll get into the strategies for then working across systems. Does that make sense? I mean, there's a way that... and the reason I say that is these systems, as we all know, have designed these standalone sort of performance assessment systems that don't talk to each other. And so their stakeholder groups, they get together, they don't even talk about measurement, they just talk about the 10 things they want to do together, and they don't measure anything because it doesn't move in that direction. I guess I'm trying to find a way that, you know, multi-stakeholder is sort of the strategy then to link the systems.
Well, maybe it falls under this health and all policy concept, in terms of, because there's amazing work being done in economic development, in transportation, in education, in many other groups that they would never consider themselves public health partners. They're doing this work independently. Now we need to get to the table with them, and I think some of these multi-stakeholder consortiums are an attempt to bring those parties together, but we have to go, I agree, more broadly beyond just clinical and public health and start looking at this health and all policy.
Right. I couldn't agree more. The measurement committee at the IOM really tried to talk about two different kinds of accountabilities here. One was the direct accountabilities through contracts, through performance measures, payments, things like that. But the other was what they call a compact accountability, where you really looked at all the stakeholders, their roles, their commitments that they make to achieving to contribute to a common end, and then how do you actually measure that? The devil was in the details. So you can find some of these groups, and there are several, and I think you mentioned some. There's some sustainability activities that link transportation and housing and energy and things of that nature that really deal with many of these issues, and then each of them make commitments as to what they're actually going to do that you can actually measure so that they hold themselves jointly accountable rather than having kind of direct accountabilities. I think that, you know, this is all fairly nascent stuff, but we can certainly lay out what some of those are and the kind of measures that they actually have tried to use or have begun using.
I had Ron, Matt, and Michael, although Matt, you may have retired. Your question.
Hi, Don and Steve. This is Ron Bialik. Very much appreciated your presentation, the good thinking and the approach that you're taking. A couple of quick thoughts. In the written document that we received prior to the meeting, you answered a lot of questions that I had in your slide presentation. I just want to be sure that in your report to the committee that you're as clear. For instance, it wasn't as clear to me your emphasis on policy, and it wasn't as clear to me your consideration of the community guide, et cetera. So I think it's important just to be sure that we don't make assumptions that all of us will take for granted that those are being considered. And I thought it was great how you integrated that into your presentation. In just some specifics, something I didn't see mentioned at all was the National Public Health Performance Standards Program, which really has established metrics, has been studied for reliability and validity, has been looked at in terms of impact on performance and outcomes at the public health system level, and I just encourage you to look into that program a little bit with regard to the paper. Community health assessment, as it is referenced, and you did talk about it, just want to be sure that when we're talking about community health assessment, it's not only needs, but also looks at community assets. In the recent definition or recent guidance from the Internal Revenue Service, it's more focused on needs. And so, again, I just don't want us to assume that we're all having a similar understanding. And then lastly, on your last page of the written document, you spoke to the 9 public health aims from the consensus statement. And I was just wondering what your thinking is to date on how you may integrate that into this work. I've been struggling a little bit with that, and just would love to hear your thoughts thus far on how you integrate those aims into this. Thank you.
Sure. And
louder.
Obviously, in this overview, we couldn't touch on every aspect we're going to do in the scan, but someone earlier this morning...
Dawn, we can barely hear you. Sorry.
Okay. Someone... this morning mentioned that there are entities that are, you know, establishing sort of performance metrics and standards in the public health community, and I definitely want to include that as part of the scan. Of course, then, you know, the various sort of, again, organizations that are setting sort of measurement and performance standards for the clinical care system as well. So thanks, Ron, for the reminder. I mean, we throw in the accreditation domains there as well. But going back to sort of these 9 proposed, quality categories that came out of HHS, I wouldn't say that I have a strategy in mind right now. I really put that in as, work to be done and to be fleshed out, in greater detail as we work through the commission's paper. What I like about the 9 characteristics is it brings it back again to this, the concepts of transparency and equity and different types of things that we in the public health community sort of, you think of the public good, the common good of health that we think about. I think there is a way to integrate them. I have to cogitate on it a bit more.
Thank you. Matt, are you passing over? Michael?
Thanks, Dawn and Steve. This is Mike Soto, and I share Ron's comments about how valuable I think this paper is going to be, and already is. But one of the things that we spoke about this morning, and Kurt mentioned, I think, is this idea about thinking through responsibility and accountability a little more carefully. And we actually worked on a report when I worked at the Institute of Medicine a long time ago that fleshed that out. And I think you got the slides. We emailed a couple of slides to you just this morning. And the idea there was that health outcomes were a shared responsibility of healthcare providers, health departments, lots of other organizations in the community, and we needed to sort of measure those, how well we're doing in terms of our shared responsibility. But in addition to that, we need to measure the performance, the actions of a variety of different players, and hold them accountable for that. So we're talking about measuring the accountability of healthcare providers and measuring the accountability of health departments, but also of employers and schools and parks departments and all of those. And this framework kind of lays out a way to sort of jointly measure the shared responsibility for health outcomes and the individual accountability for what these different entities do towards that goal.
Volume again. Dawn, please speak up.
The phone is right by my mouth. Can you hear me better? Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Much better.
It's like when you have the microphone, you have to be right up close, I guess, right to the phone today. If you go to slide 7, if someone who's managing the slides can go to that slide.
It is.
That's really what we're getting at there, is that we would want to propose ownership of the types of activities on, linked to the green box.
And if you're, you know, if you give us leeway, you know, Steve and I and the folks we're working with, we will happily put forth who we think the owners are, and knowing that it'll stir a lot of controversial discussions. But we can do that, and I think you just start writing measures then. Of course, there's types of measures that a health department will be able to do, like clinical services. And I think we'll find that you can be aligned quite nicely with then, for example, a disease outcome or a behavior outcome or a social determinant or built environment outcome that, you know, kind of listed over under the blue box.
So if I could just respond, I think that is the idea that we had in mind. And the question then becomes, you know, is it appropriate to assign specific responsibilities in a report that NQF might do? Or is that something that needs to be done at the individual community level? Because who's responsible for doing so-and-so may well be very different from one community to another. So maybe there could be suggestions about potential accountable parties.
Right, and I think one thing that Steve and I will keep in mind is, you know, I've worked on healthy people. I've seen sort of the national perspective, and I'm at a local health department. Definitely it varies, and I loved the comment on population case mix, the risk adjustment. I think that, you know, I'm waiting for a major biostatistical breakthrough that some researcher does that's going to start moving us in that direction, because then sort of a percent contribution to a health outcome, if we can move in that direction, would be great. But in the meantime, we sort of have, you know, at least at the local level, you know, local priorities will play out. And my concern is that Steve and I will default to the local perspective too much, and we need to be reminded that there's a national sort of general relevance that has to be maintained. But any guidance from the steering committee on how much, you know, across the levels of national, state, and local, and even sub-county analysis sometimes, any feedback from you guys on how you want us to break that down would be helpful, or what's important to you would be helpful.
Okay. Can you tell me, is it Jacqueline or Jackie?
Jackie. So this is Jackie Merrill. Hi, Dawn. One of the things that I'm thinking about with this is the problem of nonlinearity and the idea of the logic model. So I would encourage thinking that is not logic model based and that has a component of nonlinearity, because when you do that and you start seeing the factors, the multiple factors that are influencing any single area of your diagram, that's where you can, that will suggest the levers that may be appropriate. So when you're thinking about what we're aiming for is we want to get some kind of indicators. And in our case, some of these indicators may come from unusual sources. So the stewards of the indicators may actually be groups that don't appear to be aligned proximally in a logic model, but actually in a systems diagram would make sense. Do you understand what I'm saying? The idea that it's not a linear relationship?
Kathy, are you suggesting just to show the complexity of the relationships and interactions and the multiple influences
I'm suggesting more than that. I'm suggesting that actually can be a tool to help clarify some of the competing interests that you're talking about. You know, to actually diagram the complexity might be useful, because it's certainly something that I struggle with, and it's not an easy approach, but I actually think it's the only approach that we need to use. So that's just my suggestion. You know, I think I'm taking issue with the idea of the linear logic model versus the complex system dynamics approach.
I think you're right, because certainly if you look at the community guide, U.S. Preventive Service Task Force, they have a fairly linear model of how you get from some intervention to some outcome, as opposed to the more complex, as you said, systems dynamics models, which do understand not only the multiple factors, but the interaction of all of those that influence things. So I think we can, we obviously can't build those models, but those are the kind of things we can certainly comment on.
Well, you might not be able to build a measurable model, but you could think about that when you're diagramming out your own work, because the point I'm making is that those kinds of models can suggest the lever. They can suggest the place where the intervention might or some action or some suggestion might make a difference, and that might not be obvious when you're doing it linearly. That's what I'm saying. It's a sort of a tool to guide your thinking.
Jackie, let me ask you one question on that. Definitely we could, in our methods section, add that to our scan and sort of basically say the types of system dynamics models that exist and sort of can help inform especially chronic disease management and synergistic population health, you know, typical public health population-based interventions and then clinical care measures, and they're together in sort of this dynamic feedback loop model. We can add that to the scan as far as methods. But it also can be used very practically as a way to prioritize then interventions at various levels. And what I found very exciting is in the putting communities to work, and some of the systems models that Bobby Milstein, and Jack Homerev designed through CDC have actually been applied and are part of that grant process to apply local data in to then help prioritize at the state level plausible futures. So let me ask you this. I mean, part of it could be scans for methods that can help inform measure selection across the system, and then two, it could be discussed as a prioritization tool as well. Is that what, would you like to see it applied in that way as well?
Yes. Yes.
So at the beginning of this discussion, Helen of Hall suggested that one of the purposes here is for us to suggest to Don and Steve how they can do work that would help us in our work. And what just Don asked a minute ago, asked for our help in what levels would be helpful. And as we're thinking about what community means, what community interventions mean, what levels are we thinking about that data would be helpful on is a question they're asking us. How can they help us in that? But so let's get some back and forth. They're asking how they what input they can have from us that would help them frame it, and what other things could they be doing that would help as we're going and maybe expanding the charge a little bit here.
I actually want to lay out a question I have on this: what levels of data would be helpful, and I a challenge to myself and to the group as well as to those of you in LA. Recently, I gave a large funder the advice that if anyone could take complete responsibility for an achievement, that they shouldn't be funded again. Because my understanding of community-wide change is it must be contribution, not attribution. I think that has a lot of implications for what we're talking about now in terms of accountability. For example, the health and all policies approach, Paul, that we've been talking about, would say, for example, that transportation can have a fundamental impact on people's physical activity. Earlier you used the word exercise, but I would prefer to use the word physical activity because I think it involves a lot of things that don't traditionally get thought of when we think about exercise. I would like, clearly we could hold the transportation authority accountable for that, and that's already, as you pointed out, going a hard stretch and makes the paper more challenging. But from my perspective, it's a clinical responsibility. And I had an experience with a physician who I met who was in tears when we had a conversation about prevention, because she talked about telling someone that day that he had pretty serious diabetes and urging him, in addition to taking his medication, to being more physically active and eating better food, and broke into tears when he left the room because she knew that was a farce, because she knew the neighborhood he lived in, it just wasn't safe to be physically active. And he, too, nodding his head and saying yes, said he knew it was a farce. She felt she needs to speak up and do something about the physical activity in that neighborhood. That's part of what I would say is a community-centered health home. The implication of that, I think, is that the data needs to be data when we talk about data being useful and contributing to quality. The data we ask for needs to be data that when we say it's something's not working well, we don't have the quality, that then moves the system to move in a way that's more effective. I would say part of being more effective is physicians as advocate for walkable communities, for example, safe walkable communities. I'm not sure exactly how to do that, which is why I'm describing it as a challenge, but I think it goes to the core of some of our thinking. How do we get the medical care system, admittedly, primarily doing patient care, but also taking some of the broader responsibility for people's health, because the medical care system has almost all of the credibility and has almost all of the money.
Thank you, Matt. Matt has the answer. That's what I'm going to do.
I think this follows Jackie's comments about systems dynamics and looking at slide 7. I have a little trouble sort of reconciling this framing of population indicators and performance measures. And I think that one thing that would be very helpful to the group on the population indicators side, I mean, that's obviously not just a heap of indicators, but there's a causal pathway there of determinants and outcomes of population health. And in that causal pathway are the social determinants, the behavioral determinants, and healthcare system determinants that lead to the outcome, some of the outcome measures that are you're talking about there. So I think helping us in the framing of that model of the causal pathway of indicators would be extremely useful. And then, where I get to the struggle of sort of reconciling the framework, the performance indicators are measures of the components of that causal pathway. So there, it's not a separate set of measures. That the performance of the two that you pick, the healthcare delivery system and the governmental health system, which we've broadened, I think, in our conversation, are elements of the determinants of health that we would want to capture in that causal pathway. So I guess I don't see this dichotomy as framed here, and that the causal pathway for the population indicators would include the performance of the components of the system.
Yeah, I totally appreciate that comment. That was Matt, correct? And I think this is the brilliance of Mark Friedman. And I can't believe he's still in relative obscurity, you know, as far as sort of being this measurement guru. We can work on a way of sort of definitely showing the linkages between sort of upstream determinants, you know, the actual sort of then behavior and outcome, definitely. And what I would like to propose that we could try to do for you is show how interventions then influence steps in that causal pathway. And I think this is one of the biggest areas of confusion within the public health community is we'll move an intervention, which is a policy creation, and say it's a social environment measure. By creating a policy, you either influence a health behavior, an environment, or ultimately a disease in the causal pathway. But I'd like to step up to the challenge of seeing them separate, but showing you how these are really then levers, as Jackie was saying, levers that sort of dynamically are created and influence behaviors and health, environment behaviors and health.
Thank you, Mike.
So, Dawn and Steve, this is Mike Stogue, and I'm sitting next to Matt, so but rather than just talk to him directly, I agree that that this causal pathway really is the critical thing, but I would say there really is a distinction between the measures on the left and the one on the right, and that the ones on the left are things that the community shares a responsibility for, that the ones on the right are things that one or more entities can be held accountable for doing so that we eventually get to where we want to be.
And I think the challenge is being
policy development and enforcement as an intervention rather than a social outcome. I mean, it's tricky. But we can, and I could put the 10 essential public health services and the accreditation domains, which not, I know not everyone on the steering committee is familiar with. But does that help, Mike? I mean, these things are sort of like surveillance is an intervention that leads to improved health.
Yeah, right. I mean, I agree with that. That the things, you know, policies created, you know, somebody creates those policies. It could be the city council or something like that. Those are parts of the community that intervene to create health.
Andy. This is Andy Weber with the National Business Coalition on Health. I thought the presentation was great, and I actually like sort of how we frame this. I'm a little concerned about the scope of our activity. I mean, we've obviously said, and I think we're in agreement, that we want to get beyond government, public health, and providers. But, I mean, we could put together a very long list of entities, organizations where we would like to develop performance measures, either ones that are really focused on that individual entity or shared among different entities. So I wonder, just to give Dawn some guidance here, do we need to put some parameters around that? I mean, we've mentioned employers, we've mentioned transportation systems, we've mentioned public health. Do we need to identify them all here?
I think we're still in an early phase of trying to discover how we're going to scope this, and so I think it might be premature to do it now, but we are in perhaps the phase of creating confusion as opposed to reigning confusion in, but I found at least with like some of the other groups, it was typically when we hit that point of there is no answer to this, but some breakthrough thinking came through. So let's expand it a bit now. What's probably important is what are the important measures of population health, and then secondarily that, and then therefore who would be accountable for those things, as opposed to starting out with the accountability. I think one of the, as a distant observer, or some of the other NQF proxies, one of the issues that's been faced over time is you may have one measure for, you name it, surgical site of infection or other, and yet, or one objective to measure that, but there's a different one from a physician's office, from an ambulatory setting, from a hospital setting, from a nursing home, and we certainly want to avoid that. So the issue to me is what's the important thing to measure, and then later, who has responsibility.
Can I add a little bit on that? Because some of the, as you link sort of what are the resources and capabilities that can then be used to implement various processes, including to various intermediate and finally long-term health outcomes. If you look at the proximal side of this, which are the resources and capabilities, you can look at the whether it's the education system or the employer or the or organized public health. But it often is the people who are actually making the decisions about what those allocations should even be, the politicians and the other leaders who are making those choices. And so we do have to figure out a little bit where the accountabilities are actually going. Who is going to be making these big allocation decisions about the healthcare versus public health versus education versus taking the transportation money and putting it out into safe streets and complete streets? And these are very upstream kinds of accountabilities. And if we look very much at at specific interventions and specific things, we're going to get to different types of measures and different kinds of accountabilities. And I think it's one of the things that we've got to wrestle with if we're going to not only bridge these population and clinical areas, but then figure out how we're going to get the right resources to bear on them.
I often say in my measurement work, if decision makers, and I mean that loosely, whether it's organizational, political, healthcare, or otherwise, if some decision maker would just say, we're looking at the data, and there's four leading behaviors, that it's the whole, like, we're talking about this fiscal 3, 4, 50.
three diseases, you know, or the three risk factors that lead to four, you know, diseases that lead to 50% of deaths. If someone would just say, as a nation, we're just flat out going to fund that, do that, it would all cascade down very easily. Of course, that doesn't happen. So we're left with, we could take the four leading behaviors and really integrate this for you and show how it would fit into this framework and be very useful, I think, over time. And depending on the issue, so like, you know, physical activity, that would bring in probably all the public health system partners, you know, over time. For tobacco, maybe the same thing. You know, I guess it's just, it's the chicken or the egg. It's to me, it doesn't really matter where we start. Just know that if we start with system partners and what their specific priorities are, we're going to end up with 1,000 indicators to measure. And that gets back to scope, of which no organization can, you know, expect to track and improve 1,000 indicators, you know, of organizational performance or public health, population health and performance. And when I sit with managers to talk through this, they're like, oh, it's easy. We're just going to improve, you know, chronic disease. That's 100 to 200 indicators right there of population health improvement that you could pick. What is your priority? You know, so it's really, it's harder to go from, not bottom up, but system back to priorities. It's easier if the National Quality Forum and this committee would just pick 4, 5, 6 of your own winnable battles, you know, whether they're freedoms or not, and then and use a framework to show how it's integrated and cascades down.
Okay, thank you. Bobby, did you have a comment?
I'm not sure if I do, actually. I think, Paul, your observation before that starting from outcomes would be a useful way to work back. I think that what's just been shared is sort of along the same lines. And I'm struggling myself with whether it makes a difference where one starts, so long as one gets started. And then the last thought I have is the present analytic frame for this, which I like as it's described here, but it starts from documents that are already in the context of the U.S., and I understand why one would want to do that, because we're in the U.S. and we're trying to influence the U.S. system, and so it's a question of starting where we are. The question I have is whether it might be useful to start from documents that have been produced in other cultures, because they'll tell us something different than what we already know, and it would give us a completely different place to start. I don't know whether that's a good idea or not, but I'm struggling with whether when we get this, we're going to, on the one hand, we'll have, if it is framed in the way it was just framed, which is, okay, here's, I won't say winnable battles, because that says it's these 5 or 6 things, but if we pick a couple of outcomes, then what we're saying is, okay, we're going to try and walk back into the existing system and define what everybody needs to do, which is kind of what everybody's been trying to do for the last 20 to 30 years. The other approach is to say, how do we really want to do this differently? And what does it mean to do it differently? The only way to learn how to do it differently is to look at somebody who's doing it differently and see how they went about doing it. Does that make any sense to anybody? Besides, I don't even know if it makes any sense to me.
Yeah, I personally believe the 37th in the world is good enough. Thank you. So, one other thing, and we're out of time, but just for Dawn and Steve, we also have to look at this concept of what do we mean by the term community, because it's another word that means so many different things, and we may not come up with one definition, but at least qualifying it so we know when we use the word what we're talking about. Is it a geographic block? Is it a county? Is it a state? Is it a type of person? Based on socioeconomic, racial, you know, disease, whatever it happens to be. But we need some better definition around the word population and the word community. We are out of time, so we are supposed to have a period now where we have public comments, us and to our staff, how we will do that, and we welcome any public members who may be on the phone or in person.
Operator?
And thank you, Stephen, Dawn, very much. We'll be back in touch.
Thank you. We'll look forward to working with you.
Operator? Anthony?
Public
there anybody here who would like to make a comment who's in the room in person? Peggy, come on up, and we have 15 minutes, so I guess we'll give you 2 minutes, Peggy.
In 2008...
who you are for the folks on the phone.
Sorry, this is Peggy Honoray in the Office of Healthcare Quality in the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health, Howard Coe. In 2008, in that office, the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Health, we embarked on a very pioneering effort that some of you in the room participated in, and that was the establishment of the HHS-wide Public Health Quality Forum with input from all of the major public health stakeholder organizations. What was produced at the time was a consensus statement on quality in the public health system that laid out the 9 consensus aims for what we considered as what should be characteristics of quality when performing a public health mission, not by a governmental public health agency exclusively, but what should be the characteristics of anyone contributing to that system. We also defined public health quality. We had a follow-up convening in 2010 where we established priority areas for the improvement of quality in the public health system. In designing this project with NQF over the last 2 years or so, we very much had in mind that those initiatives would be folded into the conversation in some way in a design of whatever is going to emerge. So I appreciate Ron Bialik's mention of those this morning. And we very much would appreciate those things be considered as this process evolves and deliberations continue.
Thank you, Peggy. Anyone on the line? Anyone else wishing to make a public comment? Okay, I think that would conclude that section then. Next on our agenda is a lunch break, which looks like it is about ready. I'll turn this over to people who know what they're talking about.
It looks like we have to give the hotel staff about 5 minutes to set up, and then we'll have lunch, and we'll reconvene at 1 p.m.
Go ahead, Matt.
Take advantage of the 5 minutes. And just very briefly, back to the framing for the report. I think one thing that would be useful is to clearly distinguish between health outcomes measures and health determinants measures. And I don't know that we've been clear about that so far. And even in looking at the measure evaluation criteria, I think there are different criteria for measures of health outcomes and measures of determinants of health. When you're looking at length and quality of life measures or disparities, the criteria for measurement seem very different. They seem very different types of measures than when we look at the behavioral, social, and healthcare determinants of health. And so I think the background paper would be very useful in helping us to distinguish between those two different types of measures, how they fit together, and how they differ from each other.
Very helpful. Ron?
This might get into this afternoon's discussion or even tomorrow's, but you know, I think of measures in terms of selection of measures as, you know, what's the right measure, right? What has impact or what can have impact? But then I also think about who's going to use it. And I've been thinking all morning about that, which is we can come up with lots of right measures that, if applied, would have great impact. But I'm not really clear on, once we complete our work, who the target audience or audiences are for the measures that we will be selecting.
And it would help to have some clarity on that, because that should, I think, go into the thinking about what we choose.
Well, yeah, we should ask Alan Cummins, because the other thing is my understanding, NQF doesn't develop measures, they endorse measures. So can you answer?
I think it's a great question. Again, NQF doesn't develop measures. We really just are the neutral convener and evaluator of measures. So once you guys set the standards for what those should look like, we'll do a call for the measures, hopefully in those prioritized areas. We don't always know what the uptake of endorsed measures will be. They do tend to get picked up for accountability purposes. And again, this is such a new space. I think the real question would be, you know, might somebody get picked up by broader, newer entities like ACOs? Might communities or states looking for measures pick these up for accountability? I think it's a really good discussion, and I think it's part of what we framed for this afternoon.
And the other, so I think ACOs, should they ever get off the ground, would be a very nice target, because, you know, potentially if we can create it, they'll be held accountable for both cost savings and quality. So if we can create some population-based quality, then they can, parameters, they can then be held accountable for what's the incidence of obesity or the incidence of diabetes instead of just what's the A1C. The other area that could be helpful is the community benefit that the nonprofit hospitals have to develop based on new IRS regulations. And if we have some quality measures, perhaps they can start being held accountable for community benefit that's a more population level.
So if we were to follow these characteristics of quality in the public health system as our guideline, we would say ostensibly call for measures that are risk-reducing measures, so that we would have to come up with some criteria for what is risk-reducing. And then that could be applied broadly across different areas. So what is risk-reducing for obesity? What is risk-reducing for smoking? Is that...
I think we're going to have to keep looking. It seems to me it's a set of principles, and as we work, we should be informed by those principles, and we're done, we want to pull them back out to say, have we missed anything? You know,
what we have to refer back to, so when we're creating measures at this level, or when we're asking for measures at this level, somehow, if they're going to reflect quality for public health, or population benefit, or all these other terms that we're considering, we must have some way, these must be some criteria somehow involved in them. The same way we've got impact and gap, performance gap, we have to have some kind of risk-reducing criteria. See what I'm saying? So it's not just performance gap, if it's quality in public health, that has to have risk-reducing component. I'm getting nitty-gritty, maybe.
This doesn't relate exactly to what Jack was saying, but to the point before that, and it brings us back to this idea that somebody said earlier, we may have these thousands and thousands of measures. So I think that maybe one way we could think about what we're doing is thinking about a framework for which specific measures can be, within which specific measures can be developed.
Well,
what I would say is, what, going back to what Matt said, you know, we need to think about this logic model of how is what we're doing going to eventually contribute to the health of the community. But we may be talking about what's the ACO going to do in that context? What's the health department going to do in that context? What somebody else may be doing in that context? Not expecting that the ACO will do everything that needs to be done to improve the health of the community, but what can they do in that context, it has a relate to the goal that we eventually want.
You know, some of the discussion about accountability, like, for example, would the ACO actually held accountable, reminds me of the early discussions with physician groups around quality measures, and they're saying, I can't be held accountable, I don't control it. Well, nobody controls anything. I got teenagers. So it's, but they can be held accountable for being at the table and being involved in the conversations.
That's good in terms of the question I was asking before, which is that we really need to be clear that accountability needs to be shared, but that we start to tease out what at least we want to look at as the part of accountability for different sectors or different players. And, you know, in particular, what is the healthcare accountability, which I think then flips in terms of some of the patient-oriented measures as well. For example, I think that if we have a patient-oriented measure, where part of it is someone is not saying what are the community factors that are changeable that are leading to it. Someone's coming in, for example, with lead poisoning, and you don't ask about the community environment, but you just treat the lead poisoning. There have to be measures that say that's unacceptable if we're concerned about population quality. I actually don't like logic models, and I really like the comment that Dawn made earlier about simpler is more elegant. But I do feel, and I don't know exactly how it fits into the afternoon's discussion, we're talking about 15 or 20 different documents and national initiatives, and I feel like in a way we should be building, using all those as building blocks and as resources for us, as opposed to saying, oh, let's look at one or another and basically have the same level of conversation. I don't even understand what they all are or what their contributions would be, but I feel like, and I think particularly some of the people from the federal government understand at least many of those better, but I feel like as part of moving this agenda forward in the most effective way, it would be helpful, and I don't just want to turn this over to LA because I think it's unfair. I don't know what level of resources we're giving them, but I feel like we're asking for a huge amount, and I hope they can provide at least some of that. I feel like in a way it would be helpful to delineate what all these different efforts are, you know, categorize them or cluster them in some way. How do we put them to use? What answers have they already provided in terms of outcomes or the kinds of data associated with outcomes? For example, we talked about the prevention strategy this morning, and I brought it up on a few occasions. I know they work very, very hard on outcome measures to come up with population-based outcome measures. I don't have those at my disposal, but it seems to me that as a group, that would be one of the places we most want to go for population-based outcome measures, because they include 17 different federal agencies. They're looking at transportation, they're looking at agriculture, they're looking at economic development, and us kind of proceeding in the wilderness without all that information at our disposal. It feels like we need to be move the agenda forward using every tool we have possible.
A new PhD thesis is born. That's good. No, but it's very important. You're right. If somebody can do a table or crosswalk that for us at some level, it would be so helpful. Michael, is that... Okay, so why don't we take a lunch break and be back at 1, which I think is when the big hand is on the 12 and the little... No, let's really try to be back at 1 if we can. Thank you.